And that was the finale by Mozart, Charles Mackerras, with the Prague Chamber Orchestra. Crimson Roses, the latest from Musica Viva, New York Choir and Orchestra, is this week's new classical tracks at yourclassical.org.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio. This is
As she said, listener-supported, non-commercial radio. From Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Welcome one and all to Radio Vault. And we have got a cornucopia of seasonal type programming for you this morning. We're going to start it out in just a moment with Eve Arden as our Miss Brooks. This is the Thanksgiving weekend program. Most all the shows today are from the late 40s. Although we do have a couple of earlier shows we'll get to. Our Miss Brooks and the Thanksgiving weekend from November 27, 1949 starts it off. We will go to the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis show. We featured some of those shows before. That show actually is from the early 50s. We're going to hear the show with Dennis Morgan as the guest. We do have an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly from one of the really early episodes. So you'll have to excuse the less than perfect sound quality. This show is from 1935. And we've got a great Gildersleeve waiting in the wings. And a Jack Benny, Mary's Thanksgiving poem from 1939. All of that and much more, Radio Vault is your ticket to entertainment that our grandparents and our great-grandparents listened to before there was such a thing as television that hadn't been invented yet. And certainly the internet and everything we have today, computers that fit in the palm of our hand, weren't even thought about, weren't even dreamt about back when these shows were broadcast. So if you're ready, I think I'm ready to go back to a Thanksgiving weekend in 1949. Eve Arden, who made a successful transition to television with this program, and our Miss Brooks.
Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, written by Al Lewis. Well, last Thursday was Thanksgiving Day, and most of us realized that we had quite a bit to be thankful for. Even our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School.
Yes, a holiday means a lot to me. First, it gives me an opportunity to relax and count my lack of blessings. And second, it offers a chance to catch up on several days brooding. But this Thanksgiving was different. I knew it was going to be when I joined my landlady at breakfast last Wednesday morning. Good morning, Mrs. Davis. Did you have a nice night?
Wonderful, Connie. I didn't sleep a wink.
That sounds like fun.
I was planning my menu for tomorrow. It's Thanksgiving, you know, and I wanted something special for Minerva and me.
Minerva? Oh, there you are, you cute little kitten.
Where is she, Connie?
Taking my stocking off with her cute little paws. Stop it, Minerva. Now get away from my stocking. Either get away from those or knit me a new pair with that ball of yarn you play with.
Go out to the kitchen, Minerva. I want you to hear about tomorrow's menu.
What are you having, Mrs. Davis?
Minerva's favorite dish. S-Q-U-A-B. It doesn't do a bit of good to spell things out anymore.
I guess she's too old for that. Please go into the kitchen, Minerva. There's some milk out there. Right under the S-I-N-K. Don't tell me she slammed the door behind her.
Connie, I wanted to show you the squab I got for tomorrow.
Oh, I'd like to see it.
Well, here it is.
Where? Oh, right there behind that carrot.
It isn't very big, is it?
I've seen stuffing with larger drumsticks.
You know, Connie, I was all ready to get a nice 10-pound turkey yesterday when the clerk at the market said something that made me change my mind.
What did he say?
$8.30.
That is a pretty rude remark.
I'm afraid I was a little testy when I complained about the price. Anyway, when I demanded something cheaper, this is the bird he gave me.
He certainly did.
Well, it'll be enough for Minerva and myself. I suppose you've already been invited somewhere for turkey and all the fixings.
Where would you suggest?
Hasn't Mr. Boynton asked you out for Thanksgiving dinner, Connie?
Not yet, Mrs. Davis, but this morning he's going to be exposed to the most thorough opportunity to do so.
Good.
Dinners.
Then you bring him back here with you, Connie.
Oh, that's very sweet of you, Mrs. Davis, but that squab...
We'll make it do. Remember the old saying, there's always room for just one more.
In this case, you must mean one more squab. Well, thanks anyway, Mrs. Davis. After all, we've still got our health, which is more than I can say for that squab.
Of course, I'd rather see you eat a nice turkey dinner tomorrow. Maybe you could wangle yourself an invitation from one of your friends.
Oh, please, Mrs. Davis. Oh, that must be Walter Denton. He's giving me a lift to school. Be right there, Walter.
Why don't you find out what his folks are planning for tomorrow? Maybe you could get yourself invited there.
I'm surprised at you, Mrs. Davis. Why, I've never forced myself on anyone in my life.
Connie, take another look at that squab.
Like I say, Walter's mother may not know it yet, but there's always room for just one more. Is nice weather for Thanksgiving, isn't it, Walter?
It's more than nice, Miss Brooks. This air is absolutely succulent. It's downright savory and delicious.
One more crack like that, and I'll be gnawing on the steering wheel. Tell me, Walter, how do you usually spend Thanksgiving?
Well, usually, Mom cooks a big turkey, and we have dinner around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Gosh, I'll never forget last year's meal. First we had a fresh fruit cup, then some delicious vegetable soup, and then this big golden brown turkey was served with a special dressing made out of chestnuts and raisins and stuff, and... You want to hear the rest of it, Miss Brooks?
Certainly. Just pass me a blotter and keep talking.
Well, I don't remember all the dishes, but the hot mince pie was really tops. And my mom is just about the best cook in this town.
And like most good cooks, she probably prepares more food than she really needs.
Oh, sure. out of last year's turkey, the whole family had turkey, turkey giblets, turkey sandwiches, and turkey hash.
That's because you didn't invite enough guests over for Thanksgiving dinner. You know, Walter, I've often thought that people who are so close to each other all year round should somehow manage to spend their holidays together as well.
What kind of people are you talking about, Miss Brooks?
Well, school teachers and students, for example.
Who needs teachers on a holiday? Most teachers you get enough of during school hours, if present company accepted, of course. Well, you're a lot different, Miss Brooks.
I know, I'm hungrier. Look, Walter, about spending Thanksgiving together, if you're planning to be with your folks...
Oh, but I'm not, Miss Brooks. Now, my mother and dad are going out of town for the weekend. It's my dad's first vacation in 2 years.
Well, how come you're not leaving town with them?
It's my dad's first vacation in 2 years. He loves me, but he thinks I'm a little wearing in spots. So I'm staying over at Stretch Snodgrass's house until next week.
Oh, I see. Then you'll have Thanksgiving dinner with Mr. and Mrs. Snodgrass.
No, ma'am. They're going away with my folks. They're good friends, you know. Just like Stretch and me. But, Miss Brooks, I think your idea about spending Thanksgiving together is swell.
You do?
Sure. Then why don't you and Stretch and me have dinner tomorrow?
Dinner? Well, that might be very nice, Walter.
Oh, great. Then Stretch and I will be over to your place at 3 o'clock sharp.
My place?
Yeah. That is, if you still want us.
I wouldn't be without you. But, Walter, Mrs. Davis did the shopping yesterday, and there just weren't any good-sized turkeys left that she could afford, so what she bought was a very small...
Oh, what she bought isn't important, Miss Brooks. What counts is spending Thanksgiving with people who mean something to you. Gee, the pilgrims certainly had it all over us modern characters. When a pilgrim wanted to celebrate the holiday, he just picked up his musket and shot himself a turkey.
At the current prices, Walter, the only way I'll have a turkey tomorrow is if I pick up a musket and shoot myself a butcher.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Boynton. I just wanted to talk to you for a minute before your first class.
Well, I'm glad you dropped in, Miss Brooks. I've got some rather exciting news this morning.
I'll be glad to. I mean... what is it, Mr. Boynton?
Well, do you remember the raffle ticket I bought last month in Marty's Malt Shop?
Oh, on that green Adams hat with the red feather?
No, on a Tom Turkey. They had the drawing last night, and I won. Isn't that wonderful?
That is what I call the coincidence of all time.
Coincidence?
Why do you think I stopped by your laboratory this morning?
Well, I don't know.
To invite you over for Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow.
Well, that is nice of you, Miss Brooks. I'll be happy to come over. About what time will you be expecting me?
I'll be expecting you and Tom about noon.
Tom? Oh, you mean the turkey. Well, I'm afraid he won't be with me, Miss Brooks. You see, at this very moment, the turkey is on a train headed upstate.
Why? Did he get fed up with our climate?
No, I sent him up to my folks' place. Unfortunately, I couldn't afford to visit my parents this year, but, well, now they'll have something to remind them of me anyhow.
Must be a very tall turkey. What did he weigh, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, about 18 pounds. Of course, what I'd do with an 18-pound turkey, I'll never know.
Until tomorrow. Well, I'd better be running along now. On second thought, you needn't get to the house until 3 or 3:30. On third thought, you can back out of the whole thing if you want to.
Back out? I should say not. I'll be there all right, and thanks for the invitation.
You're welcome. But, Mr. Boynton, if you're expecting the conventional Thanksgiving Day dinner, you're liable to be a little disappointed. I'm just not having it.
Oh, what are you having?
So far, Walter Denton and Stretch Snodgrass.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment.
Right on schedule, mostly because I couldn't do anything to stop it. After breakfast, I headed straight for the kitchen. There, I took a good look at Mrs. Davis's squab. Then I took an aspirin. Then I gave the squab an aspirin. Then I decided decided to make Mrs. Davis a full partner in my panic. Oh, this is terrible, Mrs. Davis. We can't possibly serve five people with this amount of food.
Calm down, Connie. We'll make out some way. I've got cans of salmon in the house and some cheese and crackers and tidbits of one sort or another.
But one doesn't serve tidbits for Thanksgiving dinner. Oh, I wish that bird looked bigger. Did you stuff him again since we last discussed it?
I've stuffed him five times since then, Connie. In fact, the last time I went to fill him up, I got the feeling that he was trying to kick my hand away.
Oh, it's no use, Mrs. Davis. It just won't work.
I still think you should follow the advice I gave you yesterday, Connie, and get yourself invited out for a real turkey dinner.
But I've already asked Mr. Boynton to join me.
Then get him invited along with you.
Well, what about Stretch Snodgrass and Walter Denton?
Take them along, too.
Why not? While we're at it, why don't you and Minerva join our happy little group?
We'd love to, Connie. Where are we going?
I don't know where you're going, but I'm going to take another aspirin.
I'm sure the Conklins would like to have you over. I ran into Martha yesterday, and she told me that she was all ready to carve a huge turkey.
Oh, is she fighting with Mr. Conklin again?
Now, don't be silly, Connie. Martha even remarked yesterday that she was hoping Mr. Conklin would ask some of the teachers in to share their dinner.
I can just picture that. If Mr. Conklin saw any teachers at his dinner table, he wouldn't know what to bite first.
That doesn't apply to Mr. Boynton, though. Osgood is quite fond of him. And he's also extremely taken with Stretch Snodgrass. Thinks he's the best athlete Madison's ever had.
Well, what about his attitude toward me?
Call anyway. Remember, Connie, pride goeth before a fall. You've got to make a hit with Mr. Boynton. Here, I'll dial the number for you.
Oh, but Mrs. Davis, Mr. Conklin can't stand the sight of Walter Denton.
Nonsense, dear. His daughter Harriet is crazy about the boy.
Hello?
One moment, please. Miss Brooks is calling. Here, Connie.
Oh, hello?
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. This is Harriet. Gee, I'm glad you called. You're having Walter Denton over for dinner, aren't you?
That's the original plan, Harriet.
I wish we could all have dinner together, Miss Brooks. I was just talking to Mother about it this minute.
You were? Well, now, that's funny. I wanted to talk to Mother about the same thing.
Wonderful, Miss Brooks. Wait a minute, I'll put her on.
Thanks, Harriet. Harriet and her mother were just talking about getting together for dinner, Mrs. Davis.
Hello, Miss Brooks.
Hello, Mrs. Conklin.
Forgive me if I talk rather quietly, but Mr. Conklin's taking a nap in the living room. He needs the rest, you know. He's been rather irritable lately.
I know, for the last 5 years. We've known each other for 5 years now, and, well, the reason I called...
Harriet told me, Miss Brooks, I just know you feel exactly as we do, that people should share their Thanksgiving joy with their friends.
That's right, Mrs. Conklin. You understand, though, that it isn't just me. I've already invited Walter, Stretch, and Mr. Boynton.
The more the merrier, I always say.
Well, I'm glad you always say that, Mrs. Conklin, because my little party lacks just one thing which you and only you can provide.
What a beautiful way to put it. I can only say, Miss Brooks, that we'll be proud and happy to share Thanksgiving dinner with you and your friends.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Conklin.
Thank you, my dear. Harriet and Mr. Conklin and I will be at your place at 2:00 sharp.
It's almost 1, Mother. Don't you think we should wake Daddy?
In a minute, Harriet. Did you take our turkey down to the mission like I told you?
Yes, Mother. I just got back. They certainly were grateful. The man said it would feed almost a dozen people who ordinarily would go without any Thanksgiving meal at all.
Fine, dear. I know your father will be happy at the thought of sharing with our lesser privileged citizens. Now go on in and wake him up, Harriet.
Yes, Mother. Daddy.
Pass some more white meat, please.
It's time to get up, Daddy.
What? What's the matter? Oh, it's you, child. What time is it?
1:00. How do you feel after your nap?
Fine, Harriet, just fine. Except for one thing.
What's that?
I could eat my weight in wildcats. Martha! Oh, Martha!
Yes, dear? What is it?
Let's not wait till 2:00 for dinner. I'd like to eat right now.
Oh, but Osgood,
I saw that turkey in the oven when it was finished this morning, Martha, and I just can't get it out of my mind. Oh, it sure smells good, too.
You must have a pretty long smeller, dear.
We gave our turkey to the folks who run the mission. We're going out for dinner.
Oh, but I don't want to go out. I want to eat in my robe and slippers and... You gave our turkey to whom?
A municipal shelter, you know.
The man said our turkey would feed almost a dozen underprivileged citizens.
Oh, he did. Well, teachers are underprivileged citizens, too. But I don't give them my Thanksgiving dinner.
Now, calm down, Osgood. This is no day for your high blood pressure to get out of hand. We're going over to Margaret Davis' place to have dinner with Miss Brooks and some of her friends.
Miss Brooks? Who needs teachers on a holiday?
Mrs. Davis is a very exotic cook. I'm sure she'll have some wonderful dishes prepared for you.
But I don't want Mrs. Davis's dishes. I want turkey. T-U-R-K-Y, turkey.
Now, everyone buys too much for Thanksgiving dinner. Otherwise, we'd have brought our turkey over to Miss Brooks. But as it is, think of the joy you're sharing with the people at the mission, Osgood.
Joy my foot. The food at Miss Brooks' place had better be good today. Good. It had better be great.
Every time I tried to call Mrs. Conklin back, the party line was in use. Now they don't answer. They're probably on their way over here this minute to eat dinner or not to eat dinner.
Please, Connie, you're beginning to sound like Hamlet. Don't worry so about the Conklins. They'll probably bring their turkey over with them, and we'll have plenty.
Do you really think so, Mrs. Davis?
We'll soon know, Connie. Will you answer the door, please? I'm trying to find some more cans of salmon, just in case.
All right, Mrs. Davis.
Happy Thanksgiving, Miss Brooks.
A very happy Thanksgiving, Miss Brooks.
Hello.
The same to you. But is this all the party?
Well, what do you mean, Miss Brooks?
I mean, just you three? Nothing waiting out in the car or anything?
Well, we were going to bring our turkey along, but we know what a well-stocked larder you folks must have, so we donated it to the mission.
The mission?
One of my favorite charities. There's no joy like sharing. May we come in now and start sharing yours?
If you'll just sit here in the living room, I'll go back to the kitchen and tell Mrs. Davis you're here.
Oh, Harriet and I will go back and help out, Miss Brooks. You've done enough for one day. Why, I'll bet you worked like a beaver this morning.
Gnawed through six fingernails. Oh, I didn't do too much, no.
Come on, Mother. I'll fix the salad dressing that new way you showed me.
All right, dear. And I'll tell Mrs. Davis about the new things we've been doing with parsley.
Never mind the side dishes. Let's just get that turkey to the table pronto.
You chat with Miss Brooks, dear. We'll just be a little while.
And we'll make it snappy. I could eat my weight in wildcats, Miss Brooks.
If they come in cans, you may get the chance. I mean, we'll be sitting down as soon as the others arrive, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, yes, I forgot. You're having some of your friends in. I hope that lame-brained dunce, Walter Denton, isn't expected.
Want some popcorn, Mr. Conklin? Or potato chips?
No, thanks. Who's coming to this dinner, Miss Brooks?
Well, Mr. Boynton, for one.
Oh, nice chap, Boynton. Far less irritating than many of his contemporaries.
What's the trouble, Mr. Conklin?
I'm not a well man. I've had some very strange symptoms lately.
What kind of symptoms?
Well, every so often I get sudden, blinding flashes of appetite.
Oh, well, that's because you're under such a strain, Mr. Conklin. You see, under great emotional tension, many people experience sudden and uncontrollable appetites. It's psychosomatic to some extent.
Really? Now perhaps you'd like me to stretch out on the couch and tell me how, at the age of three, I was convinced that my younger brother was a cocker spaniel.
Yours, too? I was only trying to stall. Help, Mr. Conklin. I had an aunt who suffered just like you do. I remember one time my uncle caught his nose in the piano bench. Auntie ran right down to the corner and bought herself a pickle.
A pickle?
It satisfied her nervous craving. When she stayed with us, we always had to keep a big supply of food on hand. Big juicy steaks, chops, and chicken, ducks, cold cuts, potato salad.
Please, please, Miss Brooks. I want my dinner.
But Mr. Conklin, the others aren't... It's open. Come on in.
Oh, hello, Miss Brooks. Well, Mr. Conklin, say, this is a surprise.
Hello, Boynton.
Can we sit down now, Miss Brooks?
Not quite yet. Pull up a chair, Mr. Boynton.
Thanks. Well, how does the turkey look? Did you get a nice-sized bird?
Well, to be honest, Mr. Boynton, our turkey may not be such a big bird, but I'm sure the party is going to be a very big turkey. Oh, I almost forgot. There are some salted peanuts in this dish, Mr. Conklin.
One would almost think you were trying to destroy my appetite. But nothing can do that, Miss Brooks. Absolutely nothing.
Well, the door was open, so I just breezed on in. Hi, Miss Brooks.
Here comes nothing now.
Huh? Oh, hi, Mr. Boynton. And Mr. Conklin.
Hello, gentlemen.
Miss Brooks, I've got some bad news for you.
You'll have to get in line, Walter. What is it?
Well, Stretch's aunt and uncle insisted that he have dinner with them today, so he can't possibly be here in time to eat with us. Isn't that awful?
I'm absolutely devastated.
Me too. Gosh, Miss Brooks, what'll we do with all the extra food that's left over?
We'll eat it.
At last! Come on!
May I escort you to the dining room, Miss Brooks?
It won't be necessary, Mr. Boynton. I'll just follow Leo the lion.
Cut the squab into small pieces and sprayed it with sweet air, Connie. Nobody will know it isn't turkey. Now then, keep the lid on this big tray except when you're serving, and they won't know how little we've got.
All right, Mrs. Davis. I might as well trot it in. Well, here we are. What'll you have, Mrs. Conklin?
Oh, serve Mr. Conklin first, will you, dear? He's quite hungry.
Certainly. Mr. Conklin, what'll it be?
I'll have a drumstick.
A drumstick. Yes, sir. Here you are.
Where I are?
The drumstick. This is it. You know what they say, the nearer the bone, the sweeter the meat.
If this has any meat on it, it must be inside the bone.
Well, this is a brand new breed of turkey, Mr. Conklin. They've been experimenting for years with this type on the theory that the shorter the legs, the larger the breast.
Oh, then give me some of that.
Yes, sir, here it is.
This is it?
This it is. You see, when they were experimenting with the short legs, the breast didn't quite get the idea of what they were trying to do.
Well, where are the wings?
This bird didn't get his wings. He flunked out in basic training.
I thought we'd never get out of that place. Fine dinner that was.
Take it easy, Osgood. We'll stop off on our way home and get a bite somewhere.
I thought the salmon was quite tasty. But, Mother, why do you suppose Miss Brooks took Mr. Boynton aside and then excused herself in the middle of the meal and left?
Why, it was obvious, dear. Miss Brooks wanted us to have enough to eat.
And to think we sent a beautiful 16-pound turkey to the mission.
Everything happens for the best, dear. See, that's the mission right ahead of us. What a big line of people waiting to be fed. Doesn't it do your heart good to know that we
Mother,
can...
Mother, look! That man with the two plates full of turkey.
Yeah, full of my turkey. Why, it's Mr. Boynton.
So it is. And who's that right behind him with the blue cap and hitting the big bass drum?
Once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, after Mr. Boynton and I had helped to feed over 50 underprivileged citizens, including Mr. Boynton and me, we found out that we had enough money between us to take in a movie. But on our way to the Strand, Mr. Boynton suddenly stopped.
Miss Brooks, helping out at the mission made me realize how lonely the most festive occasion can be if you're not sharing it with someone.
You're so right, Mr. Boynton. I guess you and I are pretty fortunate.
Oh, we certainly are. But I just remembered that there's another member of Madison's faculty who's all alone tonight and needs cheering up pretty badly. Let's do something about it, shall we, Miss Brooks?
Oh, that's a wonderful idea, Mr. Boynton. I'm all for it. I suppose you're referring to our French colleague, Monsieur LeBlanche.
Oh, no, Miss Brooks. I was thinking of Miss Enright. Let's go pick her up right now.
Who needs teachers on a holiday?
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon.
Join us every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. for a special themed 3-hour block of music on WHFR Presents. Each week, one of our WHFR DJs will present a special curated playlist revolving around a particular theme. You never know what you're going to hear, so check it out every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. For more information on what's to come this and every Sunday on WHFR Presents, visit our website at www.whfr.fm. That's WHFR Presents, Sundays from 4 to 7 p.m.
Mom was always very organized.
But my sister and I noticed she started to forget things.
Telling my girls about my Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard.
But Mom's early detection gave us time to make a plan.
My sister and I were there for Mom and each other.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Once again, this is Radio Vault, your Tuesday edition, pre-Thanksgiving edition for November 19. We just heard Our Miss Brooks from November 27 of 1949. So let us move ahead just a bit in time to the Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis show. Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis were a comedy team that split up after about 10 years or so. Jerry Lewis, best known for his muscular dystrophy telethons. They were actually talking about it on this show. So let's do it. Let's go back to November 23rd, 1951, to Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis Show.
From Hollywood, we present the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. Now, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our master of ceremonies.
Hi, folks. This is Dean Martin. Well, it's hard to believe that another week has passed by, but here I am. So I guess this is it. Things were pretty hectic around here yesterday, though. Jerry took a walk into the park, ran into a movie crew shooting scenes for the next Tarzan picture, and the next thing we knew, he was standing in for Cheetah the Chimp. Until Apehead gets here, how's about a touch of I wonder who's kissing her now? I wonder who's kissing her now. Wonder who's teaching her how. I wonder. Daru's looking right smack in her eyes. Oh, breathing sighs and telling lies. Well, I wonder who's a buying the wine. All the lips that I used to call mine. Well, I wonder if she ever tells them of me. I wonder who's kissing her now. Now, that's funny. Jerry usually interrupts me here with that mellow voice of his. Well, finally, I have a chance to talk quietly and relax. So, at this time...
I wonder who's kissing my dog.
Well, I see I was wrong again. It's the same old Jerry.
Sure, it's the same old Jerry. We expecting the same old Elsie.
You know, for a second I thought maybe, you know, you changed or something.
Before I wasn't dirty.
No, you don't understand. I was hoping to see a change of personality.
Yeah, well, you worry about yourself, D. Martin. Everyone likes my personality the way it is.
Everyone? Who's everyone?
How could you spoil a word like who?
No, look, Jerry, you see...
Look, Jerry Nutton, I'm tired of you picking on me. I mean it. I've had all I'm going to take, understand? I'm fed up, fed up, 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 fed up. Up, fed up, fed up, 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 fed up, fed up, 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 fed up, up, fed up.
Look, Jerry, forget the whole thing. I'm sorry I mentioned it, okay?
Better. Oh, up. Better, boy.
I don't want you to change, Jerry. I like your personality. I think it's wonderful. You have charm and warmth and good manner. I love you. I love everything about you.
Must we take separate vacations?
Look, this isn't getting us anywhere. Why don't you lay low for a while and let me sing another solo one?
I got a better idea. You lay low and let me sing for a change.
You sing? Well, you're the known arpeggio from an obbligato.
Who doesn't? Listen, buddy, you're not the only one that eats those Italian restaurants in. It's about time I sang on the show, do you know what I mean? I make records too, you know.
All righty. Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Lewis now sings his latest recording. Put something on the bar beside your elbow.
Hey, Buster, how about a bourbon and soda? Don't the house ever buy a drink?
Don't the house ever buy a drink? Don't make me laugh. Ha, ha, ha. We've listened to a lot of conversation about the fortunes you have made and spent. Your story may be true, but conversation is not the stuff with which we pay the rent. Play something on a bar beside your elbows. Something like an old $10 bill. Play something on the bar beside your elbows. Yeah. You'll find in on each round at someone's orders. But still you haven't parted with a dime. Our Uncle Sam don't make this stuff too hard. So please send something else besides your dime. Lay something on the bar besides your big fat elbow. Something like, oh, I don't even care. Just so it resembles an old $10 bill, that's all. Besides your elbow, they can ring up your elbows in the till. So let's make with the loot, pal. Scratch, moolah, cabbage, coin, bankroll, whatever you care to call it. We need the money.
Surprised me, Jerry.
Yeah, why?
Well, because I didn't think you could sing so well.
Oh, that's nice of you to say that, Dean.
Well, I really mean it, Jerry. You know, it's just a simple reason that you're the comedian on the show. You make everybody laugh, and I'm the singer. I sing a song once in a while. I'm supposed to say you're supposed to be the comedian, and you sang, and everybody liked it. Don't do it no more. You know, even music publishers are frank to admit that they never know what makes some songs become great hits. I guess we all like certain tunes for different reasons. If that's true, there have to be at least a million reasons for the success of the new smash, I Won't Cry Anymore. Now that you're gone. Thank you. Thank you very much. Folks, tonight Jerry and I are very happy to welcome an old friend and one of the nicest guys in our business. He's a performer who we've enjoyed, as I know you have, in many highly successful screen roles. One of our finest singers and actors. Let's say hello to Dennis Morgan.
Thank you, folks. Say, Dean, everyone warned me about coming down here tonight and appearing on this show. You know, I don't get it. That was a very nice, dignified introduction. Everything seems to be calm and peaceful here. And I don't see any animal.
Animal? Oh, you must have heard about Jerry.
Oh, that's it. This Jerry. Tell me, what's he like?
Like nothing the world has ever known. Here he comes now. You judge for yourself.
Hey, Dean, what happened to the...
Egad, a stranger in our midst.
Jerry, take it easy. Why don't you just settle down and say hello to him?
Wait a minute. Don't tell me. Don't tell me, Dean. I know who he is. He's Jack Carson's brother.
Come on, Jerry. This is Dennis Morgan, you see?
Hey, you better let me explain it, Dean. Look, Jerry, Jack Carson and I are not brothers. It's just that, well, for many years we've been linked together cinematically.
Well, there's one Hollywood marriage that lasted.
Look, Jerry, Dennis is our guest, and he's a very important picture star.
Say, Mr. Morgan, you must know a lot of the other picture stars.
Yes, I imagine I know most of them. Why?
Well,
is it true that Lassie is really a small horse?
Well, I,
Is Frank Sinatra really an ironing board?
Oh, come on, Jerry, take it easy. Give the man a chance to answer.
Who needs the answers? I'm getting last with the questions.
Seriously, boys, it must take a lot of work. A real lot of work to do a radio show every week.
Oh, not to it, Dennis, sir. Why don't you get a show for yourself?
I don't want to be personal, but is there any money in it?
Is there any money in it?
Is there any money in it?
Is there?
Well, no.
Don't get any wrong ideas, Dennis. We may not get money, but every week we get a carload of Chesterfields, a carload of Anison, and a carload of Dentine.
Well, if you're going to get paid off in merchandise, you ought to get a sponsor like the United States Mint.
Say, I wonder what that would be like, being sponsored by the United States Mint.
Well, let's find out.
The United States Mint is on the air. Folks, this program is brought to you by the makers of that payday miracle, money. And now... The United States Mint is proud to present another chapter in that stirring drama, Just Plain Bills. Let's look in on those two ace investigators for the U.S. Mint, Martin and Morgan, as they are about to embark on another case. Tonight's adventure is called The Case of the Baffled Bird Watcher.
Well, Morgan, looks like this may be our toughest case.
That's right, Martin. This guy's hoarding $2 billion in gold. He's a real crackpot.
Let's see what his... Oh, his name is Chauncey Guberman.
Yeah, and he's an ornithologist.
You mean he ain't a citizen?
An ornithologist is a bird lover. This guy's nuts about birds.
How do you like that? Puts all his money in birds. Well, he doesn't answer. Let's go in.
Hey, must be a million birds here.
Yeah, but where's Guberman?
Hey, Guberman! Hey, Guberman!
I'm over here teaching a sparrow to read.
You're teaching a sparrow to read?
Sure. Then he's going to teach me to fly.
Hey, let's go in the other room so we can talk.
Oh, we don't have to leave. They'll keep quiet.
Birds of a feather, shut up together.
You certainly have control of these things.
Oh, that's nothing. I have one bird that can tie his own shoelaces.
You have a bird that wears shoes?
No, just the laces. He has corn.
Look, Guberman, we're from the United States Mint. You're hoarding gold here, and we want it.
Oh, no. You're not getting my gold. No one gets it.
Why?
It's strictly for the birds.
Morgan, this guy's buggy. We better humor him.
You're right, Morgan. Say, Gooberman, do you have any favorites in the bird family?
Oh, why, I most certainly have, sir. Let's see, there's the double-breasted seersucker, the blue-throated cardigan, the red-winged cummerbund, and the English Tweety bird. Why, that's the best little birdie in the business.
What does it do?
This is the bird that flies in circles, and as it flies, the circles keep getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, so what happens?
Well, it finally disappears down its own throat.
Gee, that's interesting. Now, if they all disappear, maybe the government can pick up the gold you're hoarding.
Oh, no, nobody gets my gold.
Then we'll have to take it by force. You'll have nothing left. Then what'll you do?
I'll become a bird.
But you can't become a bird.
Yeah, did you ever hear of a bird becoming a man?
Well, I see you've never heard of Walter Pigeon.
Even if you did pass for a bird, what makes you think they'd take you?
I'll spend all my gold on them. They'll have to accept me.
You can't buy the love of a bird. Turn over the gold to us and we'll pay you in fresh money from the United States Mint.
Money from the U.S. Mint? You mean those crisp green bills with the pretty pictures?
That's right.
Well, now you're talking. You've got a deal.
He is selling all his gold.
Left his birds in the cold.
Bye, bye, birdie.
No more belfries full of bats.
He tore up his welcome mats.
Bye, bye, birdies. I'll forget the things that birdies taught me. Even will forget the stork that brought me.
Though he used to love him so,
I'll even let the wild goose go.
Birdies, bye bye.
I'll miss my bird back. Birdies, bye bye.
Jerry, don't fly away. It was a hot summer night some years ago, and I was feeling mighty low. It was the last night of my two-week vacation, and the next morning I was due back on the job that held no promise and no pleasure, and no hopes for the future I used to dream of. I guess I was feeling pretty sorry for myself, although I can laugh now at the picture of this scowling kid strolling down a sweltering main street, kicking at an old bottle cap as if the cap were personally responsible for the whole thing. I started to do a little window shopping, and before I knew it, I was in front of a music store listening to a new record. As the lyrics started to penetrate, my feeling of despair lifted, and by the time it ended, I was smiling and feeling pretty sure that things would be okay. Well, folks, that was a long time ago, but I still get the same warm, comforting feeling when I hear that song.
Every time it rains, it rains. Pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven? You'll find your fortune fallen all over town. Be sure that your umbrella is upside down. Trade them for a package of sunshine and flowers, and if you want the things that you love, you must have showers.
penny from heaven for you and for me.
Dean, you know something? That nickels from heaven was sure pretty.
Now, don't you mean pennies from heaven?
You never heard of inflation?
You're out of my compliments to Jerry's, Dean.
Well, thank you, Dennis. It's always a thrill to get a compliment from another singer.
If he's a singer, how come he didn't sing?
You say I don't love you, but I do. For you, if it was for Mr. Morgan.
I'll tell you what, Dean, how about joining me in Three Blind Mice?
Oh, can I join too?
Well, of course.
Oh, goody. We'll make like a real quartet.
Three blind mice. Three blind mice.
Three blind mice.
Three blind mice. Was I rushing?
Dennis, I want to thank you a lot for joining us tonight and come up again real, real soon.
I sure will. Good night, boys. Good night.
Good night, Dennis.
And so, folks, hope to see you all again next week. Until then, this is Dean Martin.
And Jerry Lewis reminding you that we appear on radio through the courtesy of Hal Wallace Productions, producers of our soon-to-be-released picture, Sailor Beware.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
From Hollywood, you have just heard transcribed the Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show, written by Ed Simmons and Norman Lear, produced and directed by Dick Beck, with music under the direction of Dick Stabile. Dennis Morgan appeared through the courtesy of Warner Brothers Pictures, producers of that all-star musical, Starlet.
Have Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin from 1951. You are listening to Radio Vault until 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, we will have this just in. We're going to follow that by an encore performance of, in case you missed it yesterday, Mountain Stage, the latest encore edition. That and much more here on 89.3 WHFR, the station making waves.
And we bring you our master of ceremonies.
If you're 19 or older with certain underlying medical conditions such as asthma or diabetes, you can get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, a potentially serious bacterial lung disease that can disrupt your life for weeks. If you're 65 or older, it is also recommended you get vaccinated against pneumococcal pneumonia, no matter the season. Talk to your doctor about vaccination today and learn more at lung.org/protect yourself. A message from the American Lung Association in collaboration with Pfizer.
Susan McGraw here, inviting you to join me every Friday afternoon from 1 until 2 p.m. for the WHFR Journal. Local news and views, information about our campus community and our community at large, events that are coming up, opportunities to participate in, as well as information and interviews that might just make life a little bit easier. Every Friday, 1 until 2 p.m., the WHFR Journal, only here on 89.3 FM. Join us.
Rest your eyes.
exercise your imagination.
Join us for Sunday Night Mysteries at 9 o'clock. Everything from Suspense, The Mysterious Traveler, Lights Out, and many detective shows, your Sunday night on WHFR's Sunday Night Mystery Extravaganza. 9 p.m. until midnight on 89.3 WHFR.
The station making waves.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Of Johnson's Wax presents the 23rd chapter in this history of harmonious hilarity with Rico Marcelli's orchestra, Lynn Martin, Levere and Winston, the Johnson Merrymen, and Marion and Jim as those domestic deliverers of devastating diversion, Fibber, McGee, and Molly. Rico Marcelli's fine band gets some vocal assistance from that dandy octet, the Johnson Merrymen, which makes it fine and dandy. Wrap it up, Rico. Joined the Mary McGee's, we'll just skidoo down to 79 Wistful Vista and see how they're getting along. Skidoo. This modern slang, what'll they think of next? Well, we find Molly paging Fibber from the dining room.
You called.
Well, come in here and give me a hand putting up the curtains now.
Well.
Oh, who might that be at the door now?
If that ain't just like a woman. Can't answer a doorbell or open a letter without holding a guessing contest first. Well, ain't you going to see who it is, Molly?
Oh, dear, me and an apron. How's me hair, Mickey?
Huh?
How's me hair, Mickey? How's me hair, Mickey?
Oh, your hair. Well, it looks okay, Molly. Chucks, you won't be bald-headed for a long time. Don't you worry none about that, Molly.
Oh, dear, I suppose I'll have to answer it.
Take your feet off of the chair, McGee, and try and look respectable whilst I go see who it is.
Okay, Molly. Sure, I had a pig and his name was Herman, grunted in French and Swiss and German. Rodeo, do, rodeo. Where'd I put them matches? Oh, yeah. Herman chewed off his tail with a limb, was always behind but twirly for him. Rodeo, dead rat for death. Gotta get this pipe fixed.
Come right in this way, Mr. Bartleford. Fibber, this is Mr. Bartleford. Me husband, Mr. Bartleford.
How are you, Mr. McGee?
I'm tired, brother. How's yourself?
Splendid, thank you.
You working your way through college? On account of I might as well tell you, I won't have time to read no magazines till I catch up on the Sunday papers. You see?
McGee, Mr. Bartleford is from the Chamber of Commerce. Sit down and make yourself comfortable, Mr. Bartleford.
Thanks.
You betcha. Sit down and build yourself a lap, sporty. What can I do for you?
Well, Mr. McGee, I'm a committee of one representing the Chamber of Commerce to welcome you and Mrs. McGee to our little community.
Whoa.
I'm authorized to extend the hand of fellowship and give you the keys to the city.
What's the matter? They lock it up every night?
Oh, no. That was just a metaphorical expression. Oh. Now, we want you to feel at home in our shops and public buildings, our churches and our schools.
Oh.
And, well, personally, I might say that as proprietor of the Bartleford Bon Ton Bootery, I'll be very glad to see that you're taken care of in a matter of footwear.
Oh.
Now, we're having a special sale this week on shoe tree, socks, insoles.
Just a mite there, Borty. You a shoe man, you say?
Yes. The Bartleford Bon Ton Bootery, you know, on Main Street right next to the...
Well, tap me with a tombstone, brother, if that there ain't funny.
Well, what's so funny about that, McGee?
Yes, I failed to see the...
Oh, you don't get the idea, eh, brother? Well, sir, it just struck me all to a heap that we should ought to be welcomed to this town by a brother shoeman.
Brother shoeman?
Oh, now, McGee, are you...
Am I going to tell Borty here how I used to be the biggest shoeman in Santa Bologna? You betcha I am. Have a cigar, Borty? Oh,
thanks, I have one.
Oh, you got two? Come to think of it, I'll smoke my pipe. Yes, sir, Borty, I'll never forget the time Oscar Doster, the Denver Doster, comes up to me and says, "Cut away," he says. I was known as Cutaway in them days. Cutaway McGee, the card-cutting killer of Colorado.
Oh, McGee.
Yes, sir. I was running a poker game at the time and always wore a cutaway coat. Well, sir, Oscar Doster says to me, "Cutaway," he says, "how about me and you going into partnership on a business proposition?" "Namer," I snapped, drawing my six-shooter like lightning and knocking the left ear off in a cowhand that was taking aces out of his sleeve. "What's the proposition?" I said. "Well, sir," says Oscar, "I got me 42 acres of flip trees down into Santa Bologna, and I want you to go into partnership with me."
Pardon me, did you say flip trees?
Yep, flip trees. F-L-double-H-C-H.
What might a flip tree be, McGee?
That's a shoe tree. The Borty here, speaking of shoe trees into his store, reminded me of them. The natives all call them shoe trees. The scientific name for them, though, is Fluxus bothfootius. What say, Molly?
I'm Clay the Ipse Adderley, McGee.
Huh?
That's the scientific term for we'd better be hanging the curtain.
Okay, but Borty here wants to hear about the shoe tree. Don't you, Borty?
No, I'm afraid.
Well, sir, to make a long story short, or a short tail curlier, me and Oscar Doster went down to Santa Bologna and started cultivating them shoe trees. The foot or the shoe tree had a sort of a tough sod on it, kind of a cross between a melon and a coconut, which, when dried out, sand and eyelets put into them, make shoes that'll outwear leather by 5 times. Only thing that was, they was inclined to be either too loose or too tight, and all them natives had foot trouble.
You say the natives picked their shoes right off of the trees, Mr. McGee?
Yep. You see, our problem was to cultivate these trees so we could get any size shoes off them. Any size and any color. So we cross-grafted the foot trees with the redwood trees for big shoes and peanut plants for little sizes. Wasn't long before we could go out into the foot orchard and pick off a pair of shoes any size, from 2.5 AAA to 14 quadruple D. The best time to pick them was just at dawn.
I see. You shot him at sunrise.
Yes. Shot him at sunrise. I didn't get it at first.
Mr. McGee, I should think there would have been a great demand for riding boots down in that country.
They was. That's why we had a special tree grafted from horse chestnut trees and grew the finest riding boots ever seen. We got carpet clippers from hickory grass. Hickory being real rugged. You get it, Molly? Rugged and carpet clippers.
Ain't funny, McGee.
Okay, but simple. Well, sir, Bordy and me and Oscar Dosker cleaned up a cool million on them shoe trees. Still, Oscar, who was always experimenting around, tried to grow ladies' evening pumps by crossing foot trees with the night blooming cereus, and we lost all we had. Then a forest fire cleaned us out, all over a couple of trees. But say, you ain't going, are you, Bordy?
Well, I'm afraid I must be going, Mr. McGee. Oh, it's been a very interesting afternoon, I'm sure. Good day, Mr. McGee.
Good day to you, Mr. Bartford. When I need some shoes, I'll be in.
Splendid. I hope to see you both. Oh, by the way, Mr. McGee.
Huh?
What happened to the two shoe trees you managed to save?
Oh, them. Oh, shucks, I give them to Oscar Dosker. Yep. He took them down to Central America to a friend's plantation.
Plantation?
Yep, a rubber plantation. He's trying to raise shoes with rubber heels. Well, drop in again, Bordy.
Grando piano persuaders Levere and Winston put their hands and hearts into body and soul. I'm in the mood for love. We're just in the mood to hear about it. Lynn Martin.
If there's a cloud above,
it rain, we'll let it. But for tonight, forget it. I'm in the mood for
along the hot air waves to number 79 Wistful Vista, where Molly's suggestion about putting up the curtains is bearing fruit. Did we say fruit? Yes, indeed. Take a look at Bibber holding a bunch of grapes.
Dad, read it, Molly. How do you know which ones goes where and what?
Well, lay them down, McGee. You want to get them all wrinkled up? Look now, this one is for this window, and that one is for that window, and this
hey,
one...
Hey, wait a minute. You get me all mixed up, because I can't...
Well, what are you doing now?
Marking them with a pencil, so they'll know which is which.
Stop it, McGee, for heaven's sake. For 2 weeks, I sew and wash and iron the curtains, and then you want to mark them up with a pencil.
Well, shucks, you mark screens for the right window, don't you? Why not mark curtains for the... I'll get it, Molly.
You stay right where you are, McGee. You put the curtains on the rod. I'll go answer the phone.
Okay. If it's that there considerable watching boy, tell him to come right over, so...
Hello, 79 Whistle Vista, Mrs. McGee speaking. Oh, yes. Oh, well, now that's real nice of you. Thank you. Yes, we will. Goodbye.
Who was it, Molly?
It was the meat market inviting us in to see the store.
Oh, shut up. I thought Saturday. It cost me 82 cents.
Well, what of it? It is real nice of him to call and ask for our trade. That shoe man now with his... McGee, what are you doing?
That is what you think I'm doing. I'm putting the curtains onto the rod.
Well, take them off again and put them on the right rod. The narrow curtains go on the short rod. The wide curtains go on the long rod.
Oh, shucks, what in tongues is the difference?
And don't drag them on the floor, Eagerness.
Okay, but I can't keep holding them up over my head like this all the time. You won't let me fold them or lay them down no place.
Here's one all ready to hang up. Bring the step ladder.
Oh, I'll just stand on the chair, Molly. I can reach.
And scratch the chairs all up. You'll do nothing of the kind, McGee. Bring the ladder.
Well, Dad, read it, why in
bring the ladder, McGee.
Let's say I get the ladder, Molly.
Well, it's about time you use your head.
Use my head? You don't use your head on the stepladder, Molly. You use your feet. Don't you get it, Molly? I said...
That ain't funny.
Okay.
Bring the ladder here.
Make it that poor parish. Now hold it now.
light bulbs and the rugs are down and the pictures hung and the curtains up.
Home. Just, this here's a CCC camp. I've been working till my hands...
CCC camp is right.
Yeah.
CCC for cussing, complaining, and...
and curtains. Dad, Braddock, leave the receiver off the hook.
Sure, and have the phone company come out here to see what's wrong? It's probably the drugstore soliciting our business. Hello, 79 Wistful Vista, Mrs. McGee speaking. Baker's Bakery? Oh, Baker's Bakery. Oh, yes. No, not today. Oh, sure, we'll be in. Oh, thank you. Goodbye. That was the bakery, McGee.
Oh, it was.
My, they must want our trade. They're sending over some baked goods, complimentary. Now, what do you say to that?
I say, looky, 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 here comes Cookie.
Hold that ladder, Ollie.
I got it all right, McGee. I got it.
I can make me a better ladder than this here one with a handful of matches and a piece of chewing gum. Now, hand me the curtain, Molly. I'll try and get it.
You stay up there and stand still now, McGee, whilst I answer the phone.
Hey, let me get down first, Molly. Don't let go.
Oh,
hey, hold on.
Nah. You'll be all right now, McGee. Just stand steady. Hello, 79 Whistle Vista, Mrs. McGee speaking.
Oh.
Who? Oh, the dry goods store. Special today.
Oh.
How was the yard?
Hey, Molly. This your ladder is shaking like a... Hey, Molly! I'm falling!
Watch up back there. You're always clowning the minute me back is turned. Hello? Hello, Dragon Star.
Assisted by the Glee Coat Glow Club. I mean, the Glow Coat Glee Club. Otherwise known as the Johnson Merry Men. engagement book now and write this down. FMWVNMEST. Got it? That means Fibber and Molly, Wistful Vista, next Monday evening, same time. FMWVNMEST. Okay?
P.S., folks.
Oh, are you in again?
Yes. I just wanted to tell the folks while you were doing all them initials. You get it, Harpo? I said
S-C-R-A-M.
What's that mean?
That means come back and sit down, nigger little.
Oh, well, R-S-V-P.
R-S-V-P, says Fibber, meaning receiving set very prompt. At 7 next Monday, this is Harlow Wilcox, ISOM, in spite of McGee. Good night. Broadcasting Company.
Earn your Associate in Applied Science degree with Henry Ford College's Computer Information Systems Network Administration Program. This program covers a wide range of topics within the computer networking and system administration fields and prepares students for a number of industry certification exams. HFC also has transfer agreements with several four-year universities toward your completion of a bachelor degree. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
Hey, Mama, you seen him, you dug him. Now here he is with the beat that's sweet and the jive that's alive. Your very own muchacho.
Remember, a pretty girl is like a melody, but get three or four tunes playing at once, you can go crazy, yeah.
Come join the White Rabbit on the Hot Wax Radio every Sunday from 7 to 9 in the p.m. here at the station that's making waves, WHFI Dearborn.
The Jell-O program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens a program with It's a Whole New Thing. It's a whole new thing played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, once again we bring you our master of ceremonies, that bubbling personality, that effervescent comedian, that fizz, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Now, hello again. This is Jack Benny, the carbonated kid, talking. And, Don, I like that introduction. It fits me to a T. I am bubbling and effervescent. The fizz you can have back.
Well, Jack, let me explain. When I called you a fizz, it was really a compliment. I meant you were physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fizz for short.
I understand, Don, perfectly. In other words, if you called me a mug, you'd really mean I was magnificent. Is that it?
Exactly.
Well, Don, if you think I fell for that, you're a fathead, and that's short for your whole body. Anyway, Don, let's not get into a routine because I know how you appreciate a good story. And I heard a gag a few minutes ago that will positively put every one of your chins in motion. Oh, it's a honey.
It's a good one, huh?
Well, Virgil, the sound man, told it to me, and you know what a clown he is. Get this, Don. Don, I haven't even told you the story yet. What are you laughing at?
Is it the one about the nearsighted old maid that buried the midget?
No, heavens, no, Don. Heavens, not that one. This is a brand new story. Get this. There was a fellow walking down the street, and he was leading a pink alligator on a leash, when all of a sudden it started to act up and snap at him.
Uh-huh.
So the guy got annoyed, turned around to this pink alligator and said, "You better behave yourself or I'll take a bromo seltzer and that'll be the end of you." isn't that terrific, Don?
Oh, it sure is. That Virgil has a great sense of humor.
Yes, gee, that was a funny story, Mr. Benny.
Oh, Dennis, I didn't see it. Did you like it?
Yeah. But there's one thing that puzzles me.
What?
If the man was walking down the street, where did he get the bromo seltzer?
Well, I don't know. He probably had a box of it in his pocket.
Oh, then I guess he had a glass of water in his other pocket.
Yes, Dennis, and a banjo on his knee. Now, don't worry about it. Say, you're here kind of early tonight, Dennis. Where's your mother?
She's across the street in the bowling alley.
In the bowling alley? Well, with her legs, she better watch out. Anyway, Dennis, I'm glad you're here on time tonight, and I'll try and make a habit of it.
You know, Jack, I can't get over that story you told me. It's silly, but I get a great kick out of it.
Isn't it ridiculous? Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. What's so funny?
Mary, I must tell you. Did you hear the story about the fellow that was walking down the street leading a pink alligator on a leash?
Is that the one when the man said, "I'll take a bromo seltzer and that'll be the end of you"?
Yes.
No, tell it to me.
Well, this guy was... Wait, you just told me the answer. I thought you said you never heard it.
Oh, stop, Jack. That's one of the oldest jokes in the world.
Mary, jokes happen to be my business. And if that was the oldest joke in the world, I'd be the first one to know it.
Should I let him have it, folks?
Never mind. Do me a favor, will you, Mary? Go out and come back in again.
Well, gee, Jack, as long as you're telling jokes, why don't you tell a good one? I heard a gag last night that was terrific.
Oh, you did, eh?
Yeah. A man walked into the house and said to his wife, "It's raining cats and dogs outside."
Uh-huh.
And she said, "How do you know?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just stepped in a poodle.
I know where you heard that, Mary, at the Wilshire Bowl. Phil Harris has been husking that for 3 years. That's his theme joke. You know, Don, Phil's idea of humor is really pitiful.
Oh, I don't know about that, Jack. I was at the bowl one night, and the people screamed at him.
Sure they scream at him. Every time he finishes a gag, he has a waiter throw a custard pie in his face. That's why.
I didn't see anybody do that.
Oh, well, you must have been there bucket of water night. That's his idea of changing material.
Well, I'll say one thing about Phil. He sure attracts the young collegiate crowd. All the college boys go there.
They have to go there, Mary. That's part of their initiation. Before they can join a fraternity, they have to either listen to Harris or sleep all night in a graveyard.
In a graveyard?
Yes, and you'll be surprised at the number of kids around here that aren't afraid of ghosts. Yes, sir.
You know, Jack, Phil sure believes in that college spirit. Look at that sign on the bass drum.
Oh, yeah. Phil Harris and his collegians. Look, he spells collegians with one L.
Well, he spells Phil with two, so it's all even.
You know, Mary, sometimes I think that Phil...
Jiggers, here he comes now.
Don't jiggers me. Now, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. What's going on?
Well, to tell the truth, Phil, for the last 5 minutes, we've been talking about you.
Well, a little buildup ain't never hurt nobody.
No, Phil, and never done you no good, either. Your grammar's worse than Abe Lyman's, and he never got beyond blocks.
Who cares about grammar? I got other things to worry about.
Oh, I can imagine. Say, Phil, I noticed that new sign you got on the bass drum. What happened to that corny painting you used to have there?
Corny?
Yeah, you know, the one with the yellow moon and the green river and the purple trees. Remember that one, Mary?
Yeah, he used to call it Gypsy Doodle by Rembrandt.
That's the one. Whatever happened to that painting, Phil?
I sold it to the Metropolitan Museum in New York.
You mean the Museum of Fine Arts?
I don't know what they got there, but that's the joint that bought it.
Phil, are you crazy?
Crazy nothing. Someday that picture will be hanging in Paris, right next to the Mona Lulu.
Well, I'm not going to even bother to correct that. How do you like that, Mary? The most famous painting of a woman in the world, and Phil doesn't even know her name.
If she were alive, he'd know her name and phone number.
And her address and what she's doing on Friday night. Well, I got myself on a detour for no reason at all. And besides...
Hey, Jack, why don't you tell Phil that story the sound man told you? He'll get a kick out of it.
Oh, he wouldn't even get it.
Come on, Jackson, what is it? Let's hear it.
All right, Phil, do you know the one about the fellow who was walking down the street and his pink alligator snapped at him?
Know it? I'm the guy that drank the bromo.
There you are, fellas. He's always got a brilliant comeback, even if he has to make a bum out of himself. Oh, Dennis?
Yes, please?
How about a song before we get involved again?
Okay, Mr. Benny. I'm going to sing an old favorite by Stephen Foster called Genie with the Light Brown Hair.
Oh, that's swell, Dennis. I love those old songs.
Old songs, old gags. What this program needs is glands.
Mary, you just attend to your own little knitting. I'll handle the show. Sing, Dennis, the guy that drank the bromo.
Pictures I've seen of you, I thought you had black hair.
No, Don, it was brown, sort of a russet brown. No, just like the leaves in autumn.
Well, rake them up and let's get on with the show.
Mary, I wish you'd stop with those interruptions. Anyway, Dennis, I noticed another thing. Your singing seems to improve every week. You're gaining poise and confidence.
Well, thanks, Mr. Benny.
Just think, this is your seventh week on my program.
7 weeks. Gee.
Yes, sir.
Am I going to get paid pretty soon?
Pretty soon, Dennis. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going to...
Hey, Jackson, why don't you pay the kid?
Phil, I intend to pay him. I'm merely holding his salary until he's a little older. I'm teaching Dennis how to save money.
Well, he's learning from the top man.
Thanks, Miss Livingston. And if I were you, I wouldn't say another word unless you rub it up on the Lum and Abner program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going
Here you are, Dennis. Did you sing your song yet?
Yes, Mother.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Day.
Good evening.
Oh, Mother, you should have been here a few minutes ago. Mr. Benny told the funniest joke.
It was rather good. Tell it to her, Dennis.
Well, Mr. Benny was walking down the street leading a pink alligator.
Oh, stewed, eh?
Stewed, it wasn't me, Mrs. Day. Dennis got the story all wrong. I never touch a drop of liquor.
Then why have you got that red nose?
Because I'm a comedian. What do you think? My tie lights up, too. This story, Mrs. Day, is about a man who takes a bromo seltzer and gets rid of a pink alligator.
What's funny about that?
Nothing. It's very sad. I'm crying like anything. Oh, what a dame.
What's that?
I said, oh, what a game. I saw UCLA play Santa Clara yesterday. It was thrilling. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will please forgive my outburst. As I started to announce, tonight we are going to offer an original little playlet all about Thanksgiving, written especially for the occasion by Mary Livingston. Mary, let me have it, will you?
Oh, Jack, I forgot to tell you.
What?
I changed my mind about a Thanksgiving play, and I wrote a poem instead.
A poem?
Hey, Mary, you mean to say we're not going to do a Thanksgiving play?
No.
Gee, and I was all set to be one of them pilgrims.
Oh, fine. You'd make a great pilgrim, Phil.
Well, I would. Listen, buddy, my ancestors came over on the Mayflower.
Oh, did it dock in Dixie? I thought your family always lived in Tennessee.
Not originally. You see, we migrated from Massachusetts.
Migrated? You don't by any chance mean you migrated.
All right, we moved. Forget it.
Migrated. Did you hear that, Mary?
Yeah, he put in an extra syllable in it.
You're not palooling.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we get out of the mood, let me say a few words about Jalello.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, as we have no Thanksgiving play...
Mary Livingston's going to read a Thanksgiving poem.
Oh, no, nothing doing.
Oh, gee, it's swell, Jack.
I don't care. You're not going to read it.
Jack, Benny, you let me read this poem or I won't buy my Christmas cards from you this year.
Make on the ones you get. You don't even have your name printed on them. Now go ahead with your poem.
Okay.
What's the title of it?
The title is Thanksgiving. You're a little mixed up, aren't you, kid?
Well, that fits. Go ahead.
Oh, Thanksgiving. Oh, Thanksgiving. You are with us twice this year. With your pumpkin pie and dressing, and your turkey, front and rear.
That's the part I always get.
The pilgrims planned in days of yore that you'd come once, not anymore. But now you are a double feature, and we don't know which day to greet you.
Greet her?
That's what I said, you gorgeous creature.
Now, don't be funny. Go ahead with the poem.
Suppose we had two everything, two New Year's Eves to laugh and sing, two Christmases, two Labor Days, and two Jack Bennies with two toupees.
Mary, you're too pressing. Are you through?
No, but I'm coming into the stretch.
Oh.
So Thanksgiving, I don't mind.
Well.
If you're a week before or a week behind.
Mm.
What's the difference? What the heck? The turkey's the guy that gets it in the neck. The end.
Very good. silly, but you came through with flying colors. And now, Phil, how about a number to kind of break things up here?
Okay, Jackson, what do you want us to play? Anything special?
Well?
You name it, and we'll play it.
All right, how about that number you rehearsed all morning? You know, the only one you can possibly play.
Oh, okay. Hit it, boys.
He asked for requests yet. Hold it a minute, Phil. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
Are you a little mixed up on account of the two Thanksgivings this year?
Yes, I am. Why?
I was in a fog when we only had one. Goodbye.
He's not kidding, folks. He's got his shoes on backwards. Play, Phil. Swing version of an old favorite played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, fellas...
Hey, what's the matter? Aren't you going to complain about the number we just played?
No, Phil, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it, didn't you, Mary?
Yeah, it was swell. Did you like it, Don?
I thought it was okay. How'd you like it, Jack?
Oh, it was great. How'd you like Phil's number, Mary?
Well, I thought it was a little loud in spots, didn't you, Don?
Yes, it seemed a little off here and there. What did you think of it, Jack?
I thought it was lousy. And now, fellas...
Hey, what is this, a rib?
Yes, Phil, we were just kidding. I thought your number sounded exceptionally good. Didn't you, Mary?
Steal me out. I'm tired.
Now, fellas, as I started to say a little while ago, and before I forget it, Thursday being Thanksgiving, I want all of you to come over to my house for a real old-fashioned turkey dinner. How about it?
Oh, that's great, Jack. Yeah. We'll be there
and with Dennis, Dennis, this invitation goes for you also.
His mother, too?
Yes, Mrs. Day, my party wouldn't be complete without you.
You don't sound very sincere about it.
Well, what do you want me to do, send you a mash note? Glad to have you. The more, the merrier. Good heavens.
Say, Jack, is this party going to be like the one you gave last Thanksgiving?
What do you mean?
I mean, is the turkey going to be leg of lamb?
Don't worry about that, Mary. This is going to be a real dinner. I've got the biggest, fattest, juiciest turkey you ever saw.
Where'd you run over it?
I didn't run over it. It's a live turkey. I got it in my garage right now. It's roosting on my Maxwell.
That's all that car needs.
Now, you wait until you see that bird. I bet it weighs 65 pounds.
65 pounds? Why, Jack, you must be mistaken about that.
Oh, no, I'm not, Don. I had it on the scales. It's an enormous thing.
65 pounds? Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding. Wait till next Thursday and you'll see for yourself. It's going to be a swell party.
How many people are you expecting, Jack?
Well, there'll be our gang, and then I invited Clark Gable and Carol Lombard, Bob Taylor and Barbara Stanwyck, Tyrone Power and Annabella.
Oh, Jack, you always ask them to every party you give and they never show up.
Well?
Why don't you stop inviting them?
I can't stop now. They'll think I'm mad at them. You know how it is.
How can they be mad at you when they don't even know them?
I don't even know them. Listen, Phil, I know every one of those stars personally.
Sure, Jack sells them their Christmas cards.
Mary, will you stop harping on that? The only reason you ever got cards from me is because I happen to have some left over.
Every year.
Oh, quiet. Now, don't forget, fellas, Thursday night at my house.
Oh, okay, we'll be there, Jack. You know that.
Boy, we're going to have a big turkey and cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes. And, Don, guess what kind of jello we're going to have for dessert?
Strawberry?
No.
Raspberry?
No.
Cherry?
No.
Orange?
No.
Lemon?
No. Give up?
Yes.
Lie. You see, Don, you almost had it.
There's a kindergarten commercial if I ever heard one.
Never mind, that's what we're going to have. Now look, kids, if I don't see you again before Thanksgiving, be sure and be at my house by 7 o'clock sharp. And don't eat a big lunch so you'll really enjoy the turkey. I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
All right, what do you want?
Well, boss, I just heard you talking about a big Thanksgiving party Thursday night. That's my night off.
I'm sorry, Rochester, but you'll have to work. You can take a day off some other time.
I can get my twin brother to take my place.
I don't want your twin brother.
Well, he looks just like me.
I don't care if he does. I want you to be at my house on Thursday night.
How about me in spirit and my brother in person?
Rochester, don't try any tricks. I can tell the difference between you and your twin brother.
That's more than his gal can.
Never mind. Now, look, Rochester, I want you to get that turkey up to 70 pounds by Thanksgiving, so go out in the garage and feed it.
I'm working on a Christmas card.
They can wait. Now, go out in the garage and feed the turkey.
Okay. Oh, say, boss, I meant to ask you something about that bird. Are you sure it's a turkey?
What do you mean, am I sure it's a turkey?
Well, I went out in the garage a few minutes ago, and she laid an egg as big as a cantaloupe.
As big as a cantaloupe? What are you talking about?
Not only that, but every time I go in there, she sticks her head in a bucket of sand.
What?
Boss, you bought an ostrich.
I bought an ostrich?
That's right. She just ate the headlights off your car.
The headlights? How do you know?
She had two Adam's apples, and they were going down fast.
It's all your fault, Rochester. You were with me when I went shopping for a turkey. Why did you let me buy an ostrich?
I told you it was a pretty big bird for the money, but you know you.
Well, I guess there's nothing we can do about it now. Isn't that awful? I got a polar bear in the guest room and an ostrich in the garage.
And mice in the pantry. Let's move out.
Now, don't get panicky, Rochester. I'll be home in a few minutes. Meanwhile, call up the market and order a turkey.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
What?
Have you changed your mind about using my twin brother Thursday night?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'll figure out something. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Rochester. Rochester. Well, I'll be darned.
What's the matter, Jack?
Plenty. That big turkey I bought turned out to be an ostrich.
Oh, boy. You're going to be lonesome on Thanksgiving.
I am not. Now, Mary, don't worry. We're going to have a swell dinner. Play, Phil. I wonder if you can eat an ostrich. I don't know. current Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Now, don't forget, Mary, next Thursday night at my house for a real Thanksgiving dinner.
Count me out, Jack.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going to serve that ostrich. I'm going to have a turkey.
Oh, you are, eh?
Yes.
Well, if I find a headlight in the dressing, watch out.
Oh, don't worry. Good night, folks, and a happy Thanksgiving.
Here's news. Every Tuesday night, the Aldrich family is on the air, starring Ezra Stone as Henry Aldrich, that lovable hard luck kid. Consult your local newspaper or radio guide for time and stations, and be sure to tune in on the Aldrich family next Tuesday night.
Bluebirds in the Moonlight is from Gulliver's Travels. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Join us every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. for a special themed 3-hour block of music on WHFR Presents. Each week, one of our WHFR DJs will present a special curated playlist revolving around a particular theme. You never know what you're going to hear, so check it out every Sunday from 4 to 7 p.m. For more information on what's to come this and every Sunday on WHFR Presents, visit our website at www.whfr.fm. That's WHFR Presents, Sundays from 4 to 7 p.m.
percent of community college students report food insecurity and are going to bed hungry. Shocking, right? A friend sitting next to you in class could be going hungry and you'll never know. The good news? HFC is here to help. The Hawk's Nest has non-perishable food items available for students experiencing hunger. And you can help too. By donating non-perishable food items or money, you can be sure that 100% of your donation goes directly back into your college community. Donate today and fill a friend's plate. Go to hfcc.edu and search Hawk's Nest.
All right, you are listening to Radio Vault, November 19 edition. Pre-Thanksgiving, of course. We have some seasonal programming just for you. We just heard, from November 19, 1939, Mary's Thanksgiving Poem, Jack Benny Program. And we're going to continue in just a moment with the great Gildersleeve, Dinner Time at His House back in 1942, right here on 89.3 WHFR's very own Radio Vault. Every Tuesday we do this between 10 o'clock and 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock today, this just in. Background sounds are none other than Jeff Lorber Fusion from his Philly Style CD. The song is called Gigabyte. from the campus of Henry Ford College, where WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Don't forget, we have Mr. President coming up in about a half an hour, Thanksgiving proclamation show, and the big thing is for you to guess what president proclaimed Thanksgiving. That coming up in about a half an hour. In the meantime, let's go back to November 22nd, 1942.
The Great Gildersleeve. Yeah. The Kraft Cheese Company, who also bring you Bing Crosby every Thursday night, present each week at this time Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve, written by John Wheaton. We'll hear from the Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. Well, let's get on to the Great Gildersleeve, who has been putting in a busy Saturday morning down at the water department trying to clear his desk of all the odds and ends that have piled up there. As we join him now, we find him almost down to the blotter and feeling pretty good about it.
Action, yes, action. That's the keynote today, Miss Fitch.
And you have accomplished a great deal this morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, sir. Never put off till tomorrow what you can do today.
I try not to.
Procrastination is the thief of time.
There's a letter here.
Time and tide wait for no man.
This woman wrote in 2 weeks ago.
For want of a nail, the shoe was lost, Miss Fitch. Action, that's the thing, action.
Mr. Gildersleeve, are you going to answer this woman's letter?
What does she want?
Action.
Sure. Well, let's see the letter.
She says she wrote in 2 weeks ago and never got an answer.
Oh, yes, I remember this. Take an answer.
Very well.
Dear madam, in reply to your recent letter regarding a kneel in your bathtub, we wish to thank you for calling this to our attention. After a thorough investigation of the matter, we wish to report that it would have been impossible for the said eel to have gained access to your tub through the faucet. As all our water is carefully filtered, and furthermore, standard plumbing fixtures are too small to accommodate an eel of the dimensions you describe. We can only suggest that the creature either crawled up the drain, in which event your attorney should get in touch with the Department of Public Works, not us, or possibly it was placed in your tub by an enemy. While it's out of our department, we'd suggest that a stopper kept in the tub at all times should prove an effective precaution against eels in the future. Failing which, we'd advise a closer check on your friends. Very truly yours, Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, Water Commissioner. You got that?
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve.
That ought to hold her. What's next?
Well, I don't know whether you want to do anything about this.
Let's have it. Action, Miss Fitch. Let's clear the decks here.
Very well.
This is no time for bottlenecks.
No.
You'll notice that in every photograph of Donald Nelson, there's not a single paper on Donald Nelson's desk. That's the only way to be an executive. Do it now. Strike while the iron is hot. Come, come, come. What have you got there?
A 6 month reminder from your dentist.
You. Well, suppose you put that in the deferred file.
That's where it came from.
You're a hard woman, Miss Fitch. All right, call up the dentist and make an appointment for Monday.
Good.
For Leroy. Come on, let's get on here. Time's a-wasting. Hey, have you got the application for my B-gas ration?
Yes, it's right here.
Oh, I must remember to get that in this afternoon.
It's all filled out. All you have to do is sign it.
I better check it over. Let's see here. It says, occupational use of the vehicle. If vehicle is used for driving between home and fixed place of work in the principal occupation as stated in items 4 and 6 above, answer all questions in part A below. If vehicle is used in the performance of the principal occupation stated in items 4 and 6 above, oh, brother, I'll take your word for it, Miss Fitch.
You also have to get the signatures of any person sharing the ride with you.
Oh, well, Judge Hooker is my share of the rider, but he isn't speaking to me. He can darn well sign, though.
I understand very few people are going to get the B rations.
Oh, I'll get one, all right. After all, I'm a city official. I have to do a lot of official driving. I'm entitled to one if anybody is.
Yes, but have you heard who's head of the ration board now?
It doesn't make any difference. Who?
Judge Hooker.
Judge Hooker. Oh, my goodness. Hooker will find some technicality. He'll block it if he has to stage a filibuster. Maybe I better invite the old goat to Thanksgiving dinner after all.
That might soften him up a little.
Yes, certainly. He couldn't accept a man's hospitality and then trick him out of his B card, could he?
I don't recall that the application form covers that.
No, I didn't think so. Quiet. Here comes the old sourball now. Well, hello there, Judge.
When does the bus leave, Gildersleeve?
The bus leaves whenever you're ready, Judgy.
I'm ready now.
Be right with you. Can't keep a customer waiting, can we, Miss Fitch? I'll get my hat and coat.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're not forgetting.
Oh, yes. Thank you. While you're waiting, Judge, Miss Fitch has an application blank there that requires your signature. A mere formality, you know.
What's this?
Just to show that I'm sharing my car with you.
Oh, so you're applying for a B ration book, huh?
Aren't we all? Give the judge a pen, Miss Fitch. Here, oh, use mine. It's a self-filler. I think you'll like it. There, that's it.
There you are.
Thank you, Judge. Well, see you Monday, Miss Fitch. Oh, by the way, Horace, I meant to ask you before. I hope you'll give us the pleasure of dining with us as usual on Thursday.
I thought you'd forgotten all about Thanksgiving.
Not at all. Thanksgiving wouldn't be Thanksgiving without you, Horace. You know that.
Leroy, now while I fit this.
I feel like a sissy in this fool outfit.
This is the kind of clothes the pilgrims wore. And they were no sissies.
Yeah, but they didn't have to wear them in front of a whole auditorium full of people.
Stand still, will you, before I jab you with this pin.
Courtship of Miles Standish.
Why don't you speak for yourself, John?
Yeah.
Oh! I told you you'd get stuck. No. I think you're going to look real cute when I get this down.
That's just what I'm afraid of. That's what the whole school is going to think.
Leroy, will you stand still?
It wouldn't have been so bad if I was Miles Standish. I'd get to wear a helmet. But John Alden, that panty waist. I'm lucky the teacher didn't make me play Priscilla.
I don't see why you feel that way. John Alden is a hero. Remember, it's John Alden who gets the girl.
Yeah, Ethel Hammerschlag, he can have her.
And Leroy.
Hello.
Well, look at our little pilgrim.
Hey, Marge, can't I take this off now?
No, wait till I get it pinned.
You know your lines yet, young man?
Some of them.
Well, it's about time. You've been rehearsing that part for a month.
I've been trying to get out of it for a month.
That's no attitude to take. The Courtship of Miles Standish is great literature. I studied it in school myself. I remember it to this very day. This is the forest primeval, the murmuring pines and the hemlocks.
That's Evangeline, Uncle Mort.
Well, that's good, too. Let's hear you recite that speech you were having trouble with last night, Leroy.
No, I don't want to.
Come on now, I want to see if you've learned it.
Well, some other time, Uncle.
No, right now. I'd like to hear it. We both would. Wouldn't we, Marjorie?
We'd love to.
No, I won't do it. Not if she's going to listen.
Young man, you'll recite that speech or you'll go right upstairs to your room.
Okay.
We're waiting.
Let's see. Prithee, Mistress Priscilla, turn not a deaf ear to the suit of one who, though absent, yet
loves thee with a noble and undying passion. Go back and try it again.
Do I have to?
Yes. If you don't keep at it, you'll never learn the part.
If I don't learn the part, maybe we won't have to do it.
You'll do it, or I'll know the reason why. Come on now, once more.
Prithee, Mistress Priscilla. Prithee, Mistress. I can't say it.
You're not trying. Prithee, Mistress Priscilla. Now you've got me doing it. Oh, Bertie, I want to talk to you. Leroy, you go up to your room and practice.
Darn old Miles Standish anyway.
Quiet, you. Bertie, I've invited Judge Hooker to Thanksgiving dinner. So that'll mean one more.
That'll mean five more.
What?
Yes, I hope you don't mind, Uncle Mort. I invited four of the boys from Camp Fuller.
Oh, well, fine. The more the merrier. Thanksgiving isn't Thanksgiving unless there are plenty around to enjoy the turkey.
Speaking of turkey, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, Bertie?
You wouldn't want to buy a chance on one, would you, I don't suppose?
What do you mean, Bertie?
Well, the ladies at my church is holding the turkey raffle.
Again? All right, I'll buy a chance. How much are they?
25 cents. That's for one.
One chance. There you are. There's a quarter.
Thank you. Most everybody around here has bought one from me. All the neighbors.
Well, you're doing fine.
Of course. You used to buy two chances, and stands to reason you'd have twice as good a chance as they have.
No getting around that, Bertie. All right, I'll take two.
Mr. Gildersleeve, you're making no mistake. Turkey's awful expensive this year.
Yes, I know, Bertie.
48 cents a pound a day, one grocery.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. So if even you used to buy three chances, you'd still be ahead.
Sold, Bertie. Make it three.
Yes, sir. Let's see now. How many is it going to be for dinner?
Well, there's Marjorie and Leroy and Judge Hooker and Mrs. Ransom and the four soldiers and you, Bertie. That makes nine.
And you, that makes 12.
Yes. Me.
Let's go take a big turkey.
Well, maybe we should order one right away and ask him to hold it for us.
Well, let's wait and see how this raffle comes out first, Marjorie. We don't want to be stuck with two turkeys, you know.
Of course, they've sold quite a lot of chances on it. You've only got three.
Bertie, if you can guarantee I'll get the turkey, I'll take five chances.
Well, I can't promise nothing, but my cousin's doing the drawing.
I'll take five.
Well, that'll be a dollar and a quarter.
That's right. Well, here's another dollar.
That's quite a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
A dollar and a quarter will buy a lot of things.
Don't I know it?
If you wouldn't like to take a couple more chances just to protect your investment.
You get out of here, Bertie, before you ruin me. I gotta get down to the ration board. At that crowd. Could somebody tell me whether this is where you get B ration books?
No, this is where you don't get them.
Yeah, wise guy. Madam, would you mind?
You can't shove in here.
I'm not trying to shove in.
End of the line.
End of the line. I've been waiting here since 2 o'clock and you come trying to shove in.
Yeah.
Madam, I was merely trying to ask a civil question.
End of the line, Bart.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing?
Well, who do you think you're pushing?
Well, who do you think you're pushing? By George, if you weren't wearing glasses.
Well, I'll take them off. There.
You look worse. Put them back on.
What's the fuss here?
He tried to shove in ahead of me.
I did not.
He did too, and he squeezed my hand.
Oh! Now look here, my good woman.
We'll have to ask for order here, my friend. Why don't you just take your place in the line?
I'm trying to find out whether this is the right line. I've come for my B ration book.
Oh, you've come for it, huh?
Yes. I have my application right here.
You and 100 million others.
What? Young man, evidently you don't know who I am. I happen to be Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, and I have to do a lot of driving.
Where to?
Well, out to the reservoir.
To the reservoir? What for?
See if there's anything in it.
Yeah? Listen, brother, if we gave a ration book to everybody who wants to drive out to the reservoir for a little necking in the moonlight...
I don't do any necking in the moonlight.
Oh, you like it in the dark.
Yeah. No! And I didn't come here to be insulted by underlings.
End of the line, bud.
Yes, end of the line. End of the line.
End of the line. Oh, shut up. Oh, Judge, I want you to tell this young whippersnapper here where he gets off.
Well, now, Gildy.
He has the nerve to tell me I'm not entitled to a B ration book.
Well, he may be right, Gildy. You're only sharing the ride with one person.
You can't throw those technicalities at me, Hooker. You're the share of my rider. You signed this application yourself.
I know that, Gildy. As a share of the rider, I'd be delighted to see you get your ration book. But as a ration official, I couldn't possibly pass this application. My conscience wouldn't allow it.
All right, Judge. As a ration official, you needn't bother to come to Thanksgiving dinner. And as a share of the rider, from now on, you can walk.
End of the line.
Oh, you can have your own line.
The great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few seconds. Summerfield of the great Gildersleeve. Apparently, he'll get no more gas than the rest of us, but what about turkey? It's Tuesday afternoon now, only 2 days before Thanksgiving, and we find our hero checking last-minute details with Marjorie.
What about those four soldiers, my dear? Are you sure they're coming?
Oh, yes. I had a note this morning from their commanding officer. They'll arrive at 12 o'clock sharp in a jeep.
A jeep?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, brother, what an appetite they'll have. I'll have to run around the house a couple of times to get myself up to concert pitch. Can't let the boys show me up at my own table.
I don't think you need to worry about that, Uncle Mort.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we're all set. Soldiers accepted. Hooker canceled. Mrs. Ransom. Mrs. Ransom's coming, isn't she?
Well, you invited her, didn't you?
No, I thought you'd take care of that. You're the lady of the house.
Oh, but I thought you'd want to.
Oh, dear. And I went over there this morning to borrow a roasting pan for the turkey and never said a word about it. What must she think?
Oh, this is terrible. This is awful. I'll run over there right now. Serves right. She's made other plans. A fine thing. Borrow a woman's roaster and then not invite her to dinner. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Leela. I've come to explain.
I don't know what there is to explain, I'm sure.
May I come in?
Well, I'm rather busy.
Just for a moment.
What?
Leela, of course you're coming to Thanksgiving dinner Thursday.
Well, I'm hardly in the habit of going to places to which I've not been invited, Mr. Gildersleeve.
But you are invited. You've been invited all along. There was a mix-up, that's all. I thought Marjorie had asked you, and Marjorie thought I had.
How do I know? How do I know you're not just inviting me for my roasting pan?
Leela, when I thought of inviting you, nothing was further from my mind than a roasting pan.
Oh, you say those things, but you don't mean them.
It's the truth. You were the first one on my list, Leela.
Was I, Throckmorton? Sure enough.
Yeah, sure enough.
Oh, but I'm afraid I couldn't accept it this late date. You see, I've had all these other invitations.
Oh.
If I turn them down now, I know they'd be heartbroken. Much as I'd like to have dinner with you.
We're having a 20-pound turkey.
I love turkey, but I'm afraid I can't.
I'll save you the white meat.
No, don't tempt me now.
I'll save you the wishbone. We can make a wish on it.
What would you wish, Throckmorton?
I'm not supposed to tell you.
Well, I don't know that I could trust you with a wishbone. And anyway, I've promised these other people.
But you've got to come, Leela. Marjorie and Leroy will be terribly disappointed if you don't. So will I. So will Bertie. So will the Army.
The Army?
Yes, we're having four young lieutenants to dinner, too.
Throckmorton, why in the world didn't you say so?
You mean you'll come?
Will I?
You're too good to me, Leela. She's coming with bells on.
I wouldn't put it past her.
Uncle Mort, can I borrow your shotgun?
No, Leroy, certainly not. Why?
I'm supposed to bring a gun to school tomorrow.
What kind of a school are they running? A reform school?
No, Miles Standish has got to have a blunderbuss.
A blunderbuss.
Here's your building suit, Leroy. I pressed the collar, so don't mess it up.
Oh, put it on, Leroy, and show Uncle Mort how nice it looks, not finished.
Oh, no. Go ahead. You look real nice in it.
I look like a sissy in it. You look better than you do in that Mickey Mouse sweatshirt you wear all the time.
Yeah, and cleaner, too. Put on the pilgrim suit, Leroy.
Oh,
Your sister worked hard on it. Won't do you any harm to put it on once. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to meet that guy Longfellow.
Yeah. Well, Bertie, you think we're going to have enough turkey for all these people Thursday?
I don't know, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Let's see now. You've got four soldiers and the four of us here and Mrs. Ransom.
What about Judge Hooker?
Judge Hooker is an ungrateful old goat. Never mention his name in this house.
Excuse me. I didn't know it was like that again.
There'll be eight of us at dinner. And you know the way soldiers eat. You think we ought to figure on two turkeys?
I don't know, Mr. Gildersleeve. I don't know what we ought to do.
What's the matter, Bertie? You seem to be sort of dragging today.
I don't know. I don't guess I feel so good.
Out a little late last night?
No, sir. No later than usual. I just got a feeling, that's all.
What kind of a feeling?
Like things wasn't going to work out somehow.
Oh, well, don't let it get you down. By the way, when are they going to raffle off that turkey I bought all those chances on?
Yes, we can't wait much longer to find out about that. Thanksgiving's only 2 days off.
I was thinking, Mr. Gildersleeve, how would it be if we had a nice ham instead of a turkey?
Bertie, are you hiding something from us?
No, sir, I ain't hiding nothing. Except they had that raffle last night.
Oh.
You came close, Mr. Gildersleeve. You came mighty close. The winning number was 61 and you had 62.
Eesh. But it still leaves us without a turkey.
Well, sort of.
Oh, well, if you gamble, you have to expect those things.
We better order a turkey right away, though.
Yes, we can't invite all those soldiers to come 20 miles for Thanksgiving dinner and have no Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, I'll go call up the market and reserve one.
That's just the trouble.
What do you mean?
I called up the market and all the turkeys is reserved.
You mean they won't sell us one?
Butcher says there ain't a turkey left in Summerfield. I don't know what's the matter. Last week, no pot roast. This week, no turkey.
We've got to have a turkey. We've invited all these soldiers. We've invited Mrs. Ransom. We've got to find one.
But where?
Don't ask me.
All right, Unc.
How do you like it?
Like what?
The pilgrim suit.
Oh, forget the pilgrim suit. We just lost our turkey.
No turkey?
No turkey.
How do you like that? Well, it looks like we'll all wind up eating turkey sandwiches at the drugstore. Yeah. Some Thanksgiving.
The drugstore? Maybe Peavy's got a turkey. Hold everything, kids. I'll be right back. I'm going to the drugstore.
Hello, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Peavy. Peavy, you've got to help me out.
Well, I'm always glad to do a customer service.
Good. Have you got a turkey?
What was that again?
Have you got a turkey?
A turkey? Well, now, I've had people come in here and ask for some strange things, but this is the first time I've ever had a request for a turkey.
But never mind that. Have you got one?
No, Mr. Gildersleeve. Turkeys are one thing that I don't carry. I'm sorry. Have you tried the meat market?
Of course I've tried the meat market. Why do you think I came in here?
I wondered.
Now, just a minute, Peavy. You serve turkey sandwiches at your soda fountain, don't you?
Yes, we do serve a turkey sandwich.
You can't make a turkey sandwich without a turkey, can you?
Well, now, I wouldn't say that.
In other words, Peavy, your turkey sandwich is not a turkey sandwich.
Well, turkey sandwich has become a sort of a trade expression, although we serve it with genuine cranberry jelly on the side.
But suppose you don't care for cranberry jelly.
Yeah, then you just ask for the regular chicken sandwich.
Yes, sir. Peavy, I'm surprised at you. I don't know how you can sleep nights.
Well, I did used to have a little trouble, but I just take a cup of hot cocoa before going to bed now, and I find that sets me right. So does Mrs. Peavy.
Well, this isn't finding a turkey. I gotta get going. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gildersleeve. Have a nice Thanksgiving.
And same to you. Don't drink too much cocoa. And don't let Mrs. Peavy...
Any luck, Uncle Mort?
Not a bit, my dear. I've been everywhere. It's no use. The Army's picked the place clean. There's not a single turkey left.
Maybe I should warn those boys at camp. They'll do better if they stay there.
Yes. Wait. There's just one chance left.
What's that?
If we can find out who won the turkey in Bertie's raffle, we might be able to buy it from him. Bertie!
Yes, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Would you mind coming in here?
Yes, sir.
Bertie, do you know who won that turkey in your raffle?
No, sir.
Do you think you could find out?
Well, sir, I might be able to. Then again, I might not.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if I was to find out who won, you might not like it.
Come clean, Bertie. What bush are you beating about now? Do you know who won the turkey?
Yes.
Well, why didn't you say so? Who is it?
Well, you said never to mention Judge Hooker's name.
Oh!
I told you wasn't going to like it.
Well, there goes our only chance.
But Uncle Moore, don't you think Judge Hooker would be willing to let you have it?
After what I told him down at the ration board? No, my dear, I really gave him a piece of my mind there.
What if you took it all back and invited him to dinner again?
When he's got the turkey, he'd just laugh at me. Wait a minute. Bertie?
Yes?
Does Judge Hooker know yet that he's won the turkey?
No, sir. I'm supposed to deliver it to him this evening.
Excuse me, folks. I gotta see a judge about a bird. Horace? I've come to ask your forgiveness.
You've come to the wrong place, Gildersleeve.
That's a cruel attitude, Judge, but I don't blame you for taking it.
You behave like a boor, Gildersleeve.
You're right, a big boor. In front of a whole lot of people, too.
Yeah.
I could kick myself when I think of it.
Yeah, we all fly off the handle sometimes.
There was no excuse for it, doing a thing like that to my old friend.
Well, guilty of...
Horace, you may think me a sentimental old fool, but we've been pals for a good many years now, haven't we? Off and on.
Yes, Gildy, we have. Off and on.
And we've always had Thanksgiving dinner together, haven't we?
Yeah, I guess that's right.
Well, I want you to have it with us again this year.
You really mean that?
Horace, I've said it before, and I mean it now more than ever. If you don't come to Thanksgiving dinner, it just won't be Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, then, I'll
certainly be delighted to come.
Good. Don't forget now.
I won't.
We'll be counting on you.
I'll be there. What time would you like to have me come?
Oh, come early, Judge. Come about 9 o'clock in the morning.
9 o'clock?
Yeah. And when you come, would you mind bringing that turkey you won in the raffle, Judge?
Gotta be going. But it's been a mighty pleasant day.
Oh, stick around, Judge. The evening's young yet.
No, I've got to get an early start in the morning. But I don't know when I've had a finer Thanksgiving.
Well, it was your turkey, Judge.
Yeah, I share my turkey, you share your car. That's the spirit today.
Yeah, and good spirit, too. It brings people together, Judge.
Yes, it does, Gildy. I'm sorry we had that misunderstanding down at the ration board. As a matter of fact, you're probably entitled to a B ration. You use your car for official business.
Well, I don't want a B-book.
What?
No, I've been thinking about it, Horace. It seems to me the spirit of rationing is to get along with as little as you can, instead of grabbing all you can get.
You're absolutely right, Gildy. And I'm glad to hear you say it. You're a credit to the community.
Well, thank you, Horace. And you may rest assured that even though I've only a humble A-ration, my car will still be at your service at all times.
You mean that, Gildy?
I do indeed.
That's fine. I've got to meet a train at Moore's Junction at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good night, Gildy.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by Billy Mills. This is Ken Carpenter speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to tune in again next week for the further adventures of the Great Gildersleeve.
This program reached you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
And you are listening to Radio Vol. Great Gildersleeve there from November 22nd, 1942. We have got on tap to wind up today's program. The Mr. President Show from November 20th of 49. Who do you think proclaimed the fourth Thursday of every November as Thanksgiving? Who is the president who did that, huh? You will have the answer to that. And I could say much more, but you'll have the answer before the end of the show. This is Radio Vault on the station that makes waves, 89.3 and WHFR.FM. Stick with us.
Earn your associate's degree in applied sciences with Henry Ford College's Automotive Technology Program. This program offers an in-depth study of multiple systems found in today's vehicles. HFC's Automotive Technology Program is fully certified by the National Institute for Automotive Technology Program by the ASE Educational Foundation. For more information on this or any other area of study, visit hfcc.edu today.
Light from the Underground is a radio show filled with musical surprises. You'll get a chance to hear new music, often artists you aren't familiar with, and we might even mix in some classics that you haven't thought of in years. I'm Bill Keith, and I enjoy digging through all the music we've received to spotlight the best music I can find. I focus on singer-songwriters across a wide variety of genres. Add in some blues or Americana, maybe a bit of gospel music, and some indie rock to mix things up, and you have Light from the Underground. Thanks to Henry Ford College for making WHFR possible. Their investment allows us to create radio that's focused on Dearborn and the greater Detroit area. and thank you for being a loyal listener. Check out Light from the Underground Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.
Transcribed. I happen temporarily to occupy this White House. I am a living witness that any one of your children may look to come here as my father's child has.
Mr. President, starring Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Edward Arnold and written by Gene Holloway. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
In a moment, we'll bring you Edward Arnold as the man in the White House. Many years ago, the president sat in a laddered-backed, cane-bottomed chair and read reports written by young men whose wages he paid out of his own pocket. No telephones plagued him. He could come and go as he pleased. Take a swim in the Potomac or ride in the woods around Washington. Today, the president sits in an air-conditioned office, surrounded by telephones, dictating into a wire recorder. If he wants to walk, he must stay inside the black iron bars enclosing the White House grounds. From the ladder back to chair to air conditioning, from then to now, many presidents have lived in the White House, men of differing personalities, tempers, and talents. Our Mr. President, the job is to play them all, and he's done it. Edward Arnold has become the man in the White House. On the street, in stores, he's greeted with, "Hello, Mr. President. We like the show. We know you like it, too. Listen and see if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based."
Here's a story that happened in Washington a few years ago. Listen closely and see if you can tell who the president was. The president had many problems, and he intended to closet himself this particular night and study them in quiet solitude. As he was just going into his study, two goats hauling a small boy on a chair came clattering down the White House corridor.
Giddy up! Giddy up!
Giddy up! Yeah, there. Well, what's going on? Whoa, whoa!
Whoa, whoa, my fine Arabian steeds! Ho!
Hello, Father.
Oh, well, where are you going behind those two splendid Arabian horses?
Well, I'm going in search of adventure. Would you care to come along?
Oh, I doubt if the goats could pull me.
Oh, sure they could. Try it.
Well...
Go ahead, try it. Those two goats are the finest horses ever bred in Arabia, and they make fine speed in the corridor. Try them.
Well, maybe I'll just sit down and see.
Mr. President.
Uh-oh, looks like we're surrounded, son.
Are those two goats that I see hitched to that chair?
No, Mother. Those are Arabian horses.
What have I told you about bringing those goats into the house?
Arabian horses, my dear.
Goats are Arabian horses? What have I said about bringing them into the house?
Oh, I forget.
You have a very convenient memory. Mr. President, what did I tell you about those goats being brought into the house?
I forget, too.
The place for goats is not the White House corridor. We've been through this time and time again. Now take them out. Immediately.
Yes, sir.
And then come back. Your father wants to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Come on, goats.
Now, I want to have a little talk with you, Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
How do you expect me to teach that child anything if you aid and abet him in everything?
Oh, he's such a little fellow and he's lonely.
But you're spoiling him, you, I, and the whole country. And it really isn't fair to him. Now, yesterday you took him down to stunts again, and you must have bought out his entire stock of toys.
I didn't have any toys when I was young, and that set of soldiers. Did you get a good look at that set of soldiers, my dear? I just couldn't keep my hands away from them.
But your purchases didn't end with a set of soldiers.
Well, I bought the things I liked, and then I bought the things he liked. And then I bought the things that his brother would have liked.
But his brother's dead.
I know. I know. I
reckon that's why I bought the things his brother would have liked.
I understand. That's why the boy gets extra cookies and candy and extra stomach ache. And that's why sometimes in the night I get up and go in just... But I still say it isn't fair to him to spoil him. And we should all watch ourselves. And there's no excuse at all for bringing a pair of goats inside the White House. And you must scold him for it.
Very well, my dear, very well.
There's a lady out here to see you.
A lady to see me?
Well, my goodness, bring her in out of the rain.
Please come in.
Thank you. Oh, my, you're so through. Here, let me take your wrap.
Oh, thank you. You must be the president's wife.
Yes, I am.
I'm Mrs. Sarah Hale, the editor of Godey's Lady Book.
How do you do?
I realize it's a terrible imposition coming like this without an appointment. But I hope for just a few minutes of the president's time.
Then do come into my study, Mrs. Hale. I am the president, and I should be most happy to talk to you.
Thank you. I know how busy you are.
You talk to the boy for me, will you, my dear?
I'll talk to him, but you can talk to him yourself, too, later. Come on, son.
Yes.
Sit down in that chair by the fire, Mrs. Hale. It's the most comfortable chair in the White House.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Now tell me, how can I help you?
Well, Mr. President, I wanted to talk to you about issuing a presidential proclamation declaring a day of national thanksgiving.
A presidential proclamation, a day of national thanksgiving?
Yes.
But, Mrs. Hale, these are heartbreaking days throughout this land. These are days of uncertainty and war, death. What will the mothers and fathers who are in mourning say to me if I ask them to give thanks now? What will the men on the field say and the sweethearts they've left behind them?
Well, Mr. President, I thought that especially in these times we should pause for a day of thanks and to count up the blessings we do have.
Yes, I admit there is something in what you say, and I'll give it some thought. You said you were the editor of Godey's Lady Book, Mrs. Hale?
Yes, Mr. President.
It's most unusual to meet a woman editor. How did you happen to acquire this position?
Well, until my husband's death, I lived a most quiet life. Then I had to provide for my five children. So I decided to try my hand at writing. I wrote poetry for a time. And then a novel called Northwood.
Northwood. Oh, yes, yes, I know of it.
As a result of my book, I was given the editorship of a magazine in Boston. And a few years later, Mr. Godey bought out the magazine and asked me to accept the position of literary editor of the Lady's Book. I love my work, Mr. President. I'm 75 years old now. And I hope I'm still working on the Lady Book when I'm 90.
Bless you, Mrs. Hale. I hope you are, too. Well, now I'll think over your suggestion of a proclamation, and I'll let you know what I decide. Where may I reach you?
My address is written on this card, Mr. President.
Well, I'll get in touch with you in a day or so.
Good night, Mr. President. Thank you for receiving me.
May I send for my carriage to take you home? It's a bad storm out.
Thank you. I have a carriage waiting. Good night again.
Good night.
Was that Mrs. Hale leaving?
Yes.
What did she want?
She wanted me to declare a national day of Thanksgiving.
Oh. Well, now, don't you think you'd better get upstairs and try to get some rest?
Oh, I still have some work I must do, and I want to think about Mrs. Hale's suggestion and...
Now what?
I'll go. Can I help you?
We want to see the President of the United States.
Well, come right in.
My, sure it's cold out.
What did you want with the President?
Well, Elizabeth and me... this is Elizabeth here. We're eloping, and we...
You're Southerners, aren't you?
Yes, ma'am. We're Virginians, ma'am.
I see. Well, what are you doing here?
Tom, can I whisper in your ear? Excuse us.
Of course.
Oh, yeah. We think... that is, I think we better wait and tell our business to the president.
Well, I'm the president.
You... Oh. Elizabeth, he's the president.
Are you really, sir?
I really am. Why?
Well, you just look so lot of different from the way I've heard tell you looked in Virginia.
Well, I imagine I do.
How do they say he looks in Virginia?
Well, they say...
Tom, excuse us.
Well, I wasn't going to tell him that.
I didn't know.
Now, come into my study, won't you, and tell me what I can do for you. Is it all right if my wife comes, too?
Elizabeth?
Oh, yes. I wish she would.
Well, you better take off that wet wrap.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, here, yeah, let me take it. I don't know what happened to my manners, but you startled me so. I'll hang it right up.
Come in by the fire, won't you?
You see, sir, we were eloping to Harper's Ferry, but we weren't able to get married there, and so we came on to Washington.
And when we got here, we asked the men on the street what we had to do to get married, and they said we had to come to the White House and get the president's permission.
We hope you'll give it to us, sir, because, well, we sure do want to get married.
Tom, may I whisper in your ear a minute? Excuse us, Mr. President.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You see, furthermore, Mr. President, we could never make it back home before morning, and it would be doggone awkward.
Tom, if... your language.
Oh, pardon me, Elizabeth. Pardon me, Mr. President.
Oh, that's quite all right.
It'd be pretty awkward to explain where we'd been all night.
Have I missed anything?
The young people want to get married, dear, and someone told them they had to ask my permission.
Oh, but that's so...
So, of course, I have given it. And now, we must see if we can locate a minister tonight.
Tonight?
Oh, yes, tonight. Things would be most awkward in Virginia if we didn't find a minister tonight.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, it's pretty terrible to contemplate, Mr. President. Elizabeth's brothers... You know, men have been tarred and feathered for less than this.
And Tom would look perfectly terrible in tar and feathers.
I'd feel terrible, too.
Well, I could send one of the servants out in the carriage for a minister, if you think that's the thing to do, dear.
Oh, I definitely think that's the thing to do, my dear.
Well, then I'll take care of it once. My dear, don't you want to come with me? You'll want to freshen up.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind of
you. Phew. It's a pretty serious step. Step like this for a man.
You're quite right about that.
Tell me frankly, sir, were you scared when you got right up to the final moment?
Son, I was so scared that I didn't show up at the altar.
You didn't?
I did not.
You left a lady waiting at the altar?
I'm afraid I did.
Well, Mr. President, if you'll forgive me, sir, that was a shabby Yankee trick, sir.
It was a cowardly trick. But I got so scared. Well,
what'd the lady say?
Well, she didn't say anything to me at the time. She didn't speak to me for a good long time after that.
Oh, we're made of sterner stuff in Virginia, sir.
Yes, so I've been told. But she finally forgave me, and we got married right away, so I wouldn't have too much time to think about it. That's the best way to do it.
Yes, sir. I guess the less time you have to think about it, the better, all right.
Hello.
Oh, hello, son. Come on in. This is my boy, Mr...
Ayers, sir. Yes. Tom Ayers.
You the one that's getting married?
I certainly am.
I got two goats.
Oh. Oh, that's nice.
I've got a pony, too. You got a pony?
No.
Got any goats?
No.
Just a girl, huh?
Oh, yeah, but...
Well, I'd rather have my two goats.
Well, you won't feel that way when you're Mr. Ayers' age, my son.
And you mustn't forget to scold me before you go to bed, Father. Mother will be very angry if you don't scold me.
I'll try to remember.
Well, I'm not supposed to bring the goats in the White House, you know. It was very naughty of me.
Well, that's what your mother says.
You've got to be stricter with me. Mother says you've got to be strict with me the way she is.
Well, I know, I know. Well, I'm going to be the first chance I get.
Well, the carriage is gone and Elizabeth is upstairs. Mr. Ayers, Elizabeth tells me that you're going to fight with our armies.
Yes, ma'am. I believe in this country. I want to have a hand in defending what I believe in.
Hooray! Spoken like a soldier.
No, no, my son. Spoken like a good American. Come along with me, Mr. Ayers. You'll want to fix up a little for your wedding, won't you?
I would appreciate that, sir.
Come along, then. Now, dear, no matter what else happens tonight, please don't let me forget to think about that Thanksgiving proclamation.
I'll remind you, Father. Before you have to go to bed, you have to think about the Thanksgiving proclamation. And you have to scold me.
Well, there's no rest for a president and no rest for a father. Come along, Mr. Ayers, won't you? Come along. Guess who the president was when all this happened. It really did happen, you know, so listen closely. The president had decided to have a quiet evening at home. He had planned to spend it in complete solitude going over his problems, but fate seemed to will otherwise.
Do you know what your son is doing?
I'm afraid to guess.
He's getting dressed in his uniform for the wedding.
No.
Yes.
Well, I told the Secretary of War he was starting something when he had the boy appointed a lieutenant of the United States Volunteers and gave him that uniform. He looks good in the uniform, too. Huh?
Perhaps, to a man.
Well, my dear, don't you want to go and fix up for the wedding yourself?
Well, I suppose perhaps I'd better. I won't be long. The minister should be here any minute.
Now, if I can just have a few minutes of quiet to go over these papers, huh? Now what?
Isn't there anybody down there to open that door?
I'll get it, my dear.
I don't know where the servants are tonight. I can't seem to find anyone. Jonathan should be taking care of the door.
Yes?
Are you the president? Why, yes, of course, sir. I saw the lights on downstairs, and so I knew you were up, and I just wanted to stop by and shake your hand again. Won't stay but a minute.
Oh, come in, won't you?
Thank you. Won't stay but a minute. I know you won't remember me, but I met you once a long time ago, and I wanted to shake your hand again.
Why, it's Farmer Peters. Farmer Henry Peters. What do you mean I wouldn't remember you?
You do remember. Well, well.
Of course I do.
It's been close to 30 years since we last met.
Is it? Let me see now. I was running for the legislature.
That's right, and you wanted my support. You got it, too.
And you invited me to dinner.
I did, but you said you weren't hungry, and you said if I'd leave my side, you'd mow a couple a rose for me.
Yes, and I mowed three. You know, I remember it as if it was yesterday. Tell me, how's your wife?
Well, she's well, Mr. President. She's at the hotel. It was a mite wet out for her tonight, though. She'll be sorry she didn't come, though, when she hears where I've been.
I'm sorry she isn't with you. You know, she made the best apple pies in that part of the country.
I'll tell her you said that. Say, Mr. President, there's something I've been wanting to ask you these 30 years.
Really? What's that?
I searched the place over. Where on earth did you put my whetstone that day?
Well, now, let me see. Did I use it? Yes, I did. I remember you. Yes, I remember using it. Let me see. Oh, yes. I put it on top of the gatepost.
Well, I'll be hanged. It's probably still there. Hey, that's the first thing I look for when I get home.
Well, you write and tell me if you find it, huh? Would you care to come before the fire?
No. I've got to get back to the hotel. My wife will be wondering what's become of me. It's real good to shake your hand again and be remembered by you, Miss President. Good night.
Good night, Farmer Peters. Drop by any time. It's always good to see a man from home.
Good night, Mr. President.
Any sign of Jonathan, Mr. President?
Of Jonathan?
Yes.
I'm out here, Mr. President.
Is that you, Jonathan?
Yes, Mr. President.
Well, come in. What were you doing out there?
I'm doing sentry duty, sir.
You're doing what?
I'm doing sentry duty.
But you're a house servant. Who put you on sentry duty?
Master Thomas, sir.
Thomas, my son?
Thomas did what?
Well, as soon as he was appointed a lieutenant, he organized a company from the White House servants, sir, and he's got us all on sentry duty.
Well, where are the regular sentries?
He dismissed them.
Mr. President, that's nothing to laugh about. Heavens, you sound like you have a dreadful cold. Now, Jonathan, you go and tell the servants to return to their proper places and send word for the sentries to return to theirs. My goodness.
Why did you obey Thomas, Jonathan?
Well, sir, he pulled his rank on us. It seemed to be a choice of going on sentry duty or being shot at sunrise. Naturally, none of us wanted to be shot.
Naturally. All right, Jonathan. Put things back to order if you can.
Yes, Mr. President.
You're certainly going to have to speak to that boy.
Yes, Mrs. President. Now, I must get some work done, if you don't. Oh, no.
I'll answer it. Oh, it's the minister. Come in, Reverend.
Good evening, Mrs. President. Mr. President, it's a wet night out.
It was very good of you to come. This is something in the nature of an emergency, or we would never have asked you.
I can't imagine any greater honor than being asked to perform a wedding at the White House. Is your son...
No, it's none of my sons, Reverend. But it is two of my children. My dear, will you call them? It's getting late, and there's no point in delaying the ceremony.
Yes, I'll call them immediately.
Mm-hmm. wish you both a long and very happy lifetime.
Thank you, Mr. Farrington.
Thank you, sir. We both appreciate all you've done for us.
Well, now that the ceremony is over, you have no further use for me until your first christening. So, with your permission, Mr. President, I'll be on my way.
Thank you. Thank you for helping us, Reverend.
We'd better be on our way, too, Tony.
Yes, we must.
No, we won't hear of it. You're going to stay at the White House for the night. It's much too late to go in search of other lodging.
It certainly is, and we'll be very happy to have you as our guests.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Preston. Oh, this will be something to remember all the rest of our lives.
Oh, it certainly will. And to tell our children.
Tom.
Oh, I'm sorry, Elizabeth. I didn't mean to be indelicate.
May I whisper something, Tom? Excuse us, please.
Yes, certainly.
Oh, yeah. Elizabeth wants me to say that we'll name our first child for you, Mr. President, even if it's a girl.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. That's a very great honor.
Oh, I certainly never thought I'd name any child of mine after a Yankee. But you're just as nice as any gentleman in Virginia. In fact, you're the nicest gentleman I've ever met. Outside of Tom, of course.
Well, Elizabeth, that's just about the nicest compliment I ever had in my life. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really must get to my desk. I have some work that must get done.
Father?
Thomas, what on earth are you doing up?
Well, I woke up, and I remembered. You didn't scold me for bringing the goats from the White House.
Oh, that's right. I didn't. Thomas, don't bring the goats in the White House anymore.
No, sir.
It was very naughty of you.
Yes, sir.
So, consider yourself scolded. Now, give me a kiss and go to bed.
Yes, sir.
Come on, scoot.
Thomas, you have no business up at this hour.
Well, I was just getting my scolding, Mother. Good night.
Good night. Hurry now and go to bed.
Yes, sir. Good night.
Good night, son.
Now, Mr. President, it's time that you were in bed, too.
You know, it stopped raining. Look how clear it is, huh?
Yes, we're going to have a beautiful day tomorrow.
You know, I've been thinking of the Thanksgiving proclamation.
Yes?
Yes. You know, we do have many things that we must thank God for. For the sun, the rain, the earth, and the fruits thereof. For the hope that comes when the hour seemed darkest. For the ideas and the ideals left us by our fathers. For the loved ones that comfort us and sustain us. For the young people about us, like those two tonight, starting out hand in hand with their eyes on the future. And for that future that we know will come, when man will be at peace with his fellow man. And the United States will indeed be a united group of states. Yes, many things that we must thank God for. There are many. The food on our table, the roof over our table, the clothes we wear, the wood we burn, the beds we sleep in. Simple things. Yet things so important to our fathers that when they came to this raw, untamed wilderness, they fell on their knees and gave thanks for food, for shelter, and for life itself. Yes, no matter what sorrows we carry in our hearts, no matter what we have lost, we still have much to thank God for.
Have you decided what day will be the day of Thanksgiving, Mr. President?
I think the last Thursday in November will be the day. I'll ask Mr. Seward to write a proclamation tomorrow, and then I must remember to send word to Mrs. Hale.
Well, then, happy Thanksgiving, Mr. President.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, my dear. And happy Thanksgiving to the entire country. Well, you've probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
What makes a good Sunday evening? At ABC, we think it's personalities and politics, the world picture and the Hollywood scene, plus first-rate quiz shows, all presented by the top people in their fields. One case in point is Walter Winchell. Winchell's dynamic news delivery has made him a favorite with millions. For he not only tells the facts about the news, he gets behind the news to bring you startling exposés on it. So for important inside news on the headline events of the week, plus extraordinary exposés and exclusives on domestic and foreign events, hear Walter Winchell.
And you'll hear more details, too, about the great new contest from Walter Winchell tonight on ABC. And now, back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Well, I've drawn up the proclamation as you instructed me, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Seward.
You know, it's strange when you stop to think of it, but this is the first National Thanksgiving Proclamation since the day of Washington, Mr. President.
Yes, yes. Let me read it, Mr. Seward. The year that is drawing to a close has been filled with the blessings of fruitful fields and healthful skies. To these bounties which are so constantly enjoyed that we are prone to forget the source from which they come, others have been added, which are of so extraordinary a nature that they cannot fail to penetrate and soften the heart, which is habitually insensible to the ever-watchful providence of Almighty God. Needful diversions of wealth and of strength from the fields of peaceful industry to the national defense have not arrested the plow, the shuttle, or the ship. The axe has enlarged the borders of our settlements, and the mines, as well of iron and coal as of the precious metals, have yielded more abundantly than heretofore. No human counsel has devised, nor hath any mortal hand worked out these great things. They are the gracious gifts of the Most High God, who, while dealing with us in anger for our sins, hath nevertheless remembered us in mercy. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens.
Will you sign that, Mr. President?
I will with pleasure, Mr. Seward. A. Lincoln. Be with us again next week, won't you, for another interesting story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Until then, goodbye.
This program is produced and directed by Dick Woolen. Edward Arnold appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Battleground, starring Van Johnson, John Hodiak, Ricardo Montalban, and George Murphy. Mr. President is created by Robert G. Jennings. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President Abraham Lincoln.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President.
This program was presented as transcribed from an earlier network release. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
There you go. It was Abraham Lincoln who first proclaimed Thanksgiving. And your homework is to find out what year that happened. The Edward Arnold Show we just heard was from November 20th of 1949. That is going to wrap it for today's Radio Vault. We'll do it again in a week. We're going to make way for this just in and an encore presentation of Mountain Stage. Have yourself a good one. Don't forget Sunday Night Mysteries between 9 o'clock and 12 midnight here on 89.3. See ya.
Supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
The following pre-recorded hour is a WHFR Dearborn New Music presentation.
WHFR.FM. We are the station making waves, and you are listening to This Just In, our weekly pre-recorded new music spotlight. Basically 1 hour of music that has recently been received here at the station. I'm your host this week, Rob with two B's. We're going to start things off with a cover. If you are familiar with my other shows around here on this radio station, then you know I love a cover song. And we've got